Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
There was a video I saw this morning of a guy, one of those slingshot rides.
Oh, yes.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh,
they,
yeah.
They pull you all the way down,
yeah.
And then they shoot you up in the air, and he's a big dude, and he's on with a girl, and he's screaming his head off. You've seen videos like that before.
Yeah.
But the difference is he starts screaming, I asked my pants. Oh, I asked my pants. I hate you. And I think
he really did.
Left a load in his pants.
I think the girl next to him is his girlfriend, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's saying, I hate you. I hate you and all this other stuff. I've always wanted to go on one of those, and I never have done it. Are they cool?
Yeah, I did one in Ocean City, New Jersey, probably 10, 15 years ago.
They have two rides that are similar to that at Great Adventure. They have that one that shoots you straight up, and then they have the giant swing one where they pull you way back.
Oh, sure.
And then they let you go, and you swing back and forth. And you have to pay extra. It's not part of your admission to the park. It's like $30 or something like that.
I did one at Dorney, and basically you're at the end of a really long propeller, and it just goes around in a circle, but it's so far out that you start whipping around as fast as you possibly can.
How high do you get?
Higher than any of the roller coasters that they have at Dorney.
Wow.
So it's really high up. But like you said, Preston, you pay extra for it.
Do you know, I'm pretty good with heights, but that thing, the one at Six Flags right now, the tallest
King
of the... No, the swing ride.
Oh.
I don't know if I could do 40 stories.
Yeah, there's something different about being out in the swing versus being in a roller coaster.
Yeah, the roller coaster I'm fine with.
Yeah.
You just, you know, I don't know, something about that swing.
I'll tell you what.
Scares the piss out of me.
If you were...
I'd S myself.
I would S my... No. If you had a... Like, if you could parachute by yourself, if you were, like, trained and had a whole bunch of jumps, I think it'd be kind of cool to get slingshotted.
Slingshot?
Like, slingshot.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Off of, like, the Grand Canyon or something like that. That'd be kind of neat.
Sure. I'd be surprised if somebody hasn't already done that. You know, these thrill seekers?
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be pretty neat.
They actually have one. They have a swing case here. I was looking at it. It was a viral video that was going around. It's true. One of those swing things that swings you out over the canyon, over the Grand Canyon.
Oh.
It's
pretty scary.
Steve, when I went white water rafting, when I recently just went to Colorado, while we're headed down this gorge, or canyon, I'm sorry, the guy goes, okay, look up there, this top of this cliff face.
Yeah.
A cliff face, not cliff face. And
cliff face is a serial killer.
You can... His name was Cliff Face.
No.
Not as far
have
as
you
I
heard know. Of Cliff Face? No, I haven't. 10 years ago, he killed all the counselors of the camp. He used a pair of toenail clippers. That's how he got the name Cliff Face. Clipface in the house! I can see toenail clippings all over the place. Clipface, the night he came home. Guard your cuticles.
So, what was it?
Anyway,
it was at the top of a cliff face, and we could see the swing coming out occasionally. He's like, there's a ride up there, and you can see it. And I'm like, that's crazy, man. I don't know if I'd have the balls to do that.
The technical cliff face... A term would be cray cray.
Cray cray. That's cray cray. But the one at in Vegas at the top of the Stratosphere.
I've been up there.
Oh my God. Have you?
That's
1,000 feet up.
I was there when they just opened up that attraction.
Yeah.
Did not do it because they were still going through the test phases. And anytime you're up that high and you hear the word test, you don't do it.
Exactly.
But Jesus, it looks just unreal.
Casey, we're watching a video of them slingshotting an individual up who has a parachute on, and I guess they shoot him up, and he keeps going, and then he pulled the cord.
Do you know what it's like, Preston?
That's
you
pretty
have,
sweet.
Those old army men.
Totally.
And you'd throw them straight up, and then the parachute deploys.
Yep, that's exactly what that looks like.
That's pretty awesome.
I love that.
I don't know. I just don't... I wish I had the balls to do extreme stuff like that, like those guys who do those special jumpsuits where they can glide along.
Yeah, the squirrel suit.
It looks very cool. No way.
No.
No way.
I like life too much.
I enjoyed the whitewater rafting. I did, you know, pretty heavy duty level rapids on that, but I don't know. No.
No need to do that. I mean, like, it's the law of diminishing returns, as you said, Steve.
Eventually it's going to happen.
One of those times it may not work, and that would be a bad thing.
My brother-in-law is skydiving. He's been skydiving for years now. Has almost 1,000 jumps.
Wow.
And he's basically acquiescing to that law of diminishing returns precedent is saying, in a little while, he's going to wrap it up.
Yeah, okay, like the micromort.
Yeah, you probably should. I saw this, the passing of an individual who probably had an effect on your life and didn't even know it, a guy named Robert Taylor, Robert R. Taylor, an entrepreneur of hygiene. He is the guy who created Liquid Soap.
Liquid Soap. Wow. I saw this.
Soft Soap, I think, is what it initially was called. Millions of Americans.
Soap is too hard. Ow! Ow!
It's like that guy who is using Q-tips.
Ouch! Or the one now for zoomies. Have you seen the binoculars you wear?
No.
There's a hunter walking through the woods. We assume he's carrying a rifle.
Yeah.
But the binoculars are too heavy around his neck to hold. Ow! We assume he's going to drag a dead deer out of the woods, but somehow these binoculars are too heavy. Zoomies are binocular glasses. Ow!
Ow!
Oh, my neck. This soap is so hard.
Steve, you know how you lament the fact that your wife could have bought you Apple stock?
Yes.
At one point? Well, my aunt and uncle, who have a lot of money, had an opportunity to invest in soft soap.
Zoomies up here. I'm sorry,
okay,
Nick.
No.
Here's the advent. You see the hunter. Oh. Right. There
well, look how pretty and smiling she is.
Right. And she looks like a complete moron.
I just wear these binoculars.
Wait till right. You see. Where's the hunter? He'll come out.
I saw the lady trying to lift him to her. Her arms.
Ow! Holy Christ! What is this, from a torture chamber? This thing around my neck, this lanyard string, strangling me. Ow!
Here's the deal. It's not a bad idea. Zoomies, just looking at the product, it's like,
it's
okay,
moronic.
It's a good idea.
It's a pair of binoculars, for Christ's sake. It's not like they bored two holes through a cinder block.
I know. Just the marketing.
What is this, made out of concrete? Ow! It's so overdone.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. All right.
Oh, when will someone invent binoculars you can wear? And then the commercial that's the answer to that will be, my nose is killing me. Ow! From zoomies. Can't they just jam the lenses into my eyes? I mean, at a certain point, you have to expend some energy in lifting whatever you're using. Right?
Ow!
Ow!
Nick, you were saying, Steve passed on Apple stock.
Right, yeah. So yes. Originally, this story was about soft soap, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and my aunt and uncle.
Ow! It's so purds.
No, what I didn't realize was that you could invest in pretty much anything.
Right.
And so this opportunity came along to invest in soft soap as an entity, as an entrepreneurial thing, and they passed on it, and then it became what it became.
I clearly remember when their soft soap came on the market.
Yep.
What is that?
Right.
Yeah. It was, and I don't know why it seems such a bizarre thing, because you'd been using dish soap, which is the same thing, but for your hands?
No, what about the chalk soap?
Ow! The edges on this thing.
Hey, what's chalk soap?
Oh, we had that in our grade school.
That's what I was thinking, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was, you know, like soap dispenser. And
it's like a grit.
Yes, oh. Something yeah.
I actually like that. Yeah. I always felt that your hands were, because you were basically sandblasting your hands.
Wait, I don't know what that is.
It would come out as, in case you were saying, like a grit, like what they use in auto mechanic. Same sort of deal.
Power of pumice.
Yeah. You would kind of,
super pat, pumice.
Lava.
Hit this little button, and maybe there was a grinder in there that was
grinding up little
soap flakes. But it was
These
too painful.
Flakes are painful.
Wait, Steve. For dramatic purposes, add a little reverb to that owl, if you don't mind.
Ow! What kind of soap is this? My hands are bleeding. Who uses soap this hard? Will some genius invent liquid soap so I don't have to be an amputee?
Well, let me tell you.
Oh, this toothpaste.
This guy was a bit of a genius because do you guys ever watch the show Shark Tank?
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. It's actually a very good show. It shows the entrepreneurial spirit in its rawest form.
And not only that, it also shows that just having a good product doesn't mean anything. You have to have a marketing plan. You have to have strategy and all this other
stuff.
And
matching t-shirts.
Or otherwise, investors are not going to be interested. Listen to what this guy did, okay? So, and by the way, he ended up buying Calvin Klein's cosmetics division and just made a gazillion dollars.
Wow. Well, it obviously worked out for him.
He was a former Johnson & Johnson salesman. He struck out on his own in 1964 and formed Village Bath Products and later renamed the Minnetonka Corporation. And he started out small, hand-rolling balls of soap, but was determined that he could compete with the hulking conglomerates. And one day he had an epiphany.
You and your balls of soap.
One day he had an epiphany. He said, I thought how ugly bar soap was and how it usually messes up the bathroom. And I thought, why not a high-quality liquid soap that comes in an attractive bottle? Liquid soap had already existed, but nobody had marketed it the right way. So he described soft soap dispensed with the gentle press of a miniature pump as a soap without the soapy mess. Its arrival was heralded by a staggering $6 million advertising campaign. Even more staggering was a go-for-broke gamble that he made that became a twice-told tale of business school. And here's where the genius comes in. Knowing that bigger companies would be able to copy soft soap's pump and then outproduce and outmarket and outsell them right away.
Right.
He decided to outsmart them. He pre-ordered 100 million pumps from the few manufacturers who actually made the device, effectively locking up the manufacturing capacity and giving himself a jump on capturing brand loyalty.
So,
the other companies couldn't make it.
He soap blocked them.
Because he instead of C blocking them,
he soap blocked them.
He bought up everything and kept the actual manufacturers who made that stuff, he kept them so busy that they couldn't make the product for the other big companies.
Well, that's genius.
How smart is that?
There we go.
You know, you can think of
he took
the
risk and he did it.
Yeah.
And that's some serious belief in your product, too. Yes. Buy 100 million of those pumps ahead of time?
I mean, A, I don't know where he got the investors or the money to start that up, but
right.
I mean, he had come from another company. He had worked for, I think he had worked for Johnson & Johnson or something along
those
lines.
Johnsons.
It's double your Johnson.
I want two Johnsons.
I want Johnson and Johnson.
Johnson and Johnson. This company will do much better with the second Johnson.
I think that's who he was with, this guy, Robert Taylor. But anyhow, that was that's huge, man, to be able to do that, to outsmart.
Soft soap. You know, and they say, though, and the perception is that soft soap is better and bacteria-wise better for you. It isn't.
Oh, it isn't?
They found out that it's just the same as bar soap.
It's the same. Okay, yeah. So it's not worse. Or
it's not worse or better. It will be cleaner if you don't like that residue.
Do you guys, I assume you guys all have soft soap or something similar in your
homes.
Yeah,
soft soap and bar soap.
Do you guys water it down when it gets to the end?
No.
No. I do that with shampoo.
Do you?
If I'm in the shower and I don't have any left and I'm like, oh, I'll just, you know, I'll take the bottle, I'll pour some water out and shake it up.
I'll add some Bacardi to it.
Just to get a little bit out of that.
Okay, that works.
Ooh.
You don't drink it, you just wash your head with it.
Yeah. You add water to yourself?
No, but somebody in my house does. I'm not sure who it is. It could be my wife or it could be my oldest child.
That's an old trick. My mother was from that, you know, making every cent stretch thing. So she would do the, you know, the water and the soap dispensers and stuff like that just to get every last bit of it out.
No, I hate that.
We buy the refills, though, like the big ones. And put those right back in the pump instead of buying the new pumps every time.
Sure. We do that. By the way, Casey, somebody texted in the soap was called Borax.
Okay.
They're saying that that's what that chalk soap was. It was Borax. Does that sound familiar? I've heard that name.
Well, Borax is a 20 Mule Team Borax, isn't it? Was that it, or is it?
I don't know.
It was the very gritty
soap?
Soap, yeah.
All I know is it was painful.
Ow!
Ow!
Oh, my God!
Somebody needs to come up with something better.
It's pain is insane.
Well, they had that lava soap that like mechanics or people you get.
That's
like,
what I'm saying. The power of pumice.
Is that what that was?
Their first initial foray into it was uncooled down real volcanic lava, which was bad.
I mean, your hands would be clean.
The first time you hit the pump, you just had like stumpy bones.
That's what they were. The
which
marketing
was a great
campaign was
bluegrass
clean,
performance.
Clean to the bone.
Said antibacterial.
Yeah. It's real lava. How do they keep it hot?
The other stuff that mechanics use is goop, isn't it?
Goop is a great... Goop cuts through everything, man. For mechanics, just over years and years and years, it's hard to get... The skin actually, like, you know, colors because of the grease. But that goop stuff really works.
I think that's what we used to use to clean our bongs in college.
Goop? Your bongs?
Yeah.
You use that level of strength you needed to clean a bong?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, dude, that gets gnarly. Yeah. But no, you know what? Denture cleaner.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Put some water in there, drop down in there, psh, bubbles. Cleans.
Like Pepsodent.
There you go. Like Pepsodent.
No, what is it?
No.
What denture? What is it?
Denture cream?
Polident.
Polident.
Polident. No, that's denture cream.
No, that's grip.
Oh, is it?
No, I think you're right with the Pepsodent.
Is it Pepsodent?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was toothpaste.
That is toothpaste.
Oh, what's the, what are we talking about? What are the toothpaste. You put the dentures in, you drop, they're like Alka-Seltzer tablets, you drop them in, and they clean the dentures.
Yeah. Dentures are disgusting.
So gross.
I know, so
right?
Hot.
Yeah.
They're on a hooker, they're awesome. I'm taking these out. It's going to feel really good.
And you like mistakenly see someone's laying, like sitting in a glass or something.
I want to puke, Kathy. So I want to vomit.
I think I was scarred as a kid because my grandmother on my dad's side, my dad's mom, she would run her tongue.
This is really going to gross you out.
Underneath her dentures, I guess, to, you know, get something out of there, and her teeth would pop up.
Clean out my teeth.
And I, as a child, I didn't know what that was. I'm like,
you're the devil.
She can do that.
Do you guys see this YouTube video? It's a viral video of this. He's a homeless guy, I think, in Florida somewhere, where he doesn't have like his front teeth. And he's got this mustache, and he runs his tongue along his front gums, and it looks like a little caterpillar is moving.
Really?
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool.
I've seen it.
That's worth having your front teeth bashed out.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So there's an upside.
Yeah.
You're saying to this.
It's worth having your teeth punched out with a garbage can lid.
When I was a lifeguard at this pool, this lady, her name was Ray. She's since passed, but she her husband talked her into having all of her teeth pulled, and she had dentures from a pretty young age.
Did she need to have her teeth pulled?
No.
Or was it on a bet?
No. I think maybe. It was,
I bet you I can get this chick to get all her teeth pulled.
I think maybe it was so they didn't have to have any more dental work done. Ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's really, that's a little too drastic,
You'll
I think.
Never have a cavity again.
By the way, Efferdent.
Efferdent, of course.
Was the name of the product. Thank you, texters, for checking in with us on that. By the way, this guy, how we got started on this conversation, Robert R. Taylor, who created soft soap in the 1980s. He bought Calvin Klein's cosmetic division, and he and his colleagues made news by rolling out the erotic ad campaign for Obsession perfume.
Obsession.
With Kate Moss naked, you know, or without her top on or anything like that. Yeah. So he not only did soft soap, but he got involved in that stuff, too.
Soft soap.
He's 77 years old. I'm not sure how he died.
A train hit him.
A train hit him?
He used to like to, his big favorite hobby was to crush pennies.
Right.
And he would go out.
On the train tracks.
And they would warn him.
Poor man.
And his hearing was not all it could have been, and he did not hear the train.
Well, but anyhow, I thought that was an interesting story.
I got another flat penny.
And the fact that this guy was as savvy a businessman as he was. Well, that's impressive.
To corner the market against huge companies by doing that is a masterstroke.
So we'll take a break, and we'll come back in a moment. Stay right where you are.
Stream WMMR anywhere you have an internet connection. Check out the mobile app or go to WMMR.com. You'll figure it out from there.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
I've really been looking forward to talk to Mark Goodman. We had the opportunity to meet him at the MMRBQ when it was MMR's 40th anniversary party.
What a nice guy, man.
It was great.
Yeah.
And came and said hi to us. We chatted for a little while. And
I mean, he's got a good history to talk about.
Worked here at the radio station, obviously. And the beginning days of MTV was so important to me.
Uh-huh. And it's just not what it used to be.
Well, it doesn't exist. That form of it doesn't exist anymore. But there's a book, and it is it's called VJ, The Unplugged Adventures of MTV's First Wave. And as you can imagine, some pretty wild stories about the behind-the-scenes
reading
activity.
Through the book,
Let's get him on the line, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Goodman. Hey, Mark, how you doing, man?
Good morning. Preston and Steve, what's up, you guys?
Yo, brother. How's it going? How you been, man?
Been really, really awesome. Are you guys guarding the legacy of my old station?
That is our mission every day. We always say, what would Mark Goodman do?
God love you.
God loves. I have to tell you, Mark, the book is great. Anecdotally, there's a whole bunch of great stuff. One thing that did impress me, though, is you guys were all very talented. You specifically had a very rich radio history going into, you know, the early days of MTV. But they sort of kept you down, you guys down. They kept you reeled in tightly. Am I right in assuming that? That they really didn't want you to become stars or really become Bob too
Pittman,
popular?
Bob Pittman, who is credited with founding MTV, his idea was that, yes, to keep us down, he wanted MTV to be the star and not the five of us. Mm-hmm. Inadvertently, it happened that the five of us did become celebrities during that time.
I assume, though, it was such virgin territory, and you were on, I believe you were on WPLJ in New York at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would have been a prime, you know, primo gig for anybody in radio.
Right.
And what did you see? What made you say, okay, I'm going to jump into this?
I have always wanted to be where I thought music was going, not where it had been.
Right.
And PLJ was, at that time, was really playing so much music that was older. It was stuff that I had been playing at MMR
right.
years before that.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, I'm done. I don't need this anymore. And that was what they were doing. Look, they were the number one rock station in New York, like you say. That's it.
Yeah.
If you're in radio, there's nowhere else to go. That's the place. But I was bored and frustrated, and this thing came along. And in fact, it was a friend of mine named Richard Bensavengo who was living in Philly and working at KYW, and I was going to do a video show with him, an hour-long video show that MMR was going to simulcast.
That's wild.
And that never happened.
Yeah.
Because I became music director there and stuff like that, but...
well, there
I
had been
to do video beforehand.
There wow. had been flirtations with this because those in the beginning days, and it's sort of referenced in the book. The concept of videos, they were throwaways. They were
they were promotional
things.
Nature for radio. Right.
Yeah.
Basically, they would the record companies would play them for the program directors and give them an idea of what the artist was all about. And then I guess they made enough of them, and people started to realize that this could be another form of music entertainment.
Come on, how smart was Bob Pittman? He got his 24-hour a day, 7-day-a-week programming for that channel for free.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there is a genius to it. It had to, though, and reading in the book, it had to piss you guys off. As you said, you saw Carson Daly. It was no fault of his own. He came down and just happened to take advantage of, you know, the new outlook on the way MTV should be conducted. But when you guys were there on constantly... And then they start having the award shows and things, and you guys aren't running that. They're going outside of MTV to bring in celebrity hosts and stuff. You had to be furious.
That first Video Music Awards was definitely a shock to the five of us.
Yeah.
You know, we heard about it, and we were excited. We had heard that Bette Midler and Dan Aykroyd were going to be there, but we didn't know what their function was going to be yet, so we were really thrilled until we got the script.
Well,
and all of us are paging through looking for our names in the script, and they weren't there.
That sucks.
Hey, how tight were you guys, Mark? I mean, because you worked separate shifts, I assume, amongst the five of you, were you together much?
We, especially in the first few years, the first studio that we had, the five of us shared one really small dressing room, like the size of, like, a bathroom.
Yeah.
And especially at that time, we got to be close. Look, we were five strangers, very different. Martha Quinn, who was still in college at NYU. J.J. Jackson, who was in radio longer than me in Boston and out west. And Alan Hunter, who was an actor. It was weird. We shouldn't have gotten along, but we are now family. Alan, I thought, was an idiot.
Did you really?
Is that right?
I thought he just pissed me off every day. I was like, what is he doing here?
Well,
same thing with Martha, you know. I was like, come on, they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, here
you and
JJ
that.
Were the seasoned veterans, you know.
We at least had the idea. We knew about music, and Nina was a fan. She was, you know, she played the harp. She was a musician. She knew rockers, so she had a better sense of it. But you know, Martha had been doing like an R&B show on the NYU radio station. Alan, you know, he was like, I like to rock out with Pat Metheny.
And he sort of approached it like an acting gig, didn't he? Didn't he sort of, he was married.
He talked really funny in the beginning.
Yeah, did. But I assume in those days, especially when they there was a whole bunch of stuff, decadent stuff going on in the radio industry at that time. Now you're at something that's pretty high profile. There are a lot of crazy stories with you and rock stars. How, I mean, did you sort of run the town a little bit at a point?
Once MTV came on in New York City, because for the first year we weren't on there, once it came on in New York City, things really, really changed for all of us. You know, our face became the backstage pass.
I mean, and there were drugs, obviously. I mean, that was part of the deal, too. It was up the 80s, time. Man. How crazy did it get?
There was drugs and no food.
No,
no food. What are your thoughts on MTV currently?
You know, it's just I don't have any ill will, and I don't get pissed off or sad about what they're doing now. It doesn't appeal to me. It's not, you know, it's not made for me.
Yeah,
it's made for my daughter, and I used to watch it a bit when she's 20 now. But when she was a teenager and she's watching, you know, 16 and Pregnant, well, I was, you know, kind of watching with her and making sure it was cool. But they did, MTV did what they had to do. They chose not to grow old with their audience. And the stuff that they're doing now is fine. The audience obviously loves it. I just am sad that they're not leading anymore.
No, they used to lead. And that's why the MTV Video Music Awards kill me, because I don't know of anyone, even, you know, up until the point of the awards, who's actually seen any of these videos they're winning. Let me ask you, because you wouldn't. As with a regular DJ who would sit in a studio and let the songs play out, you guys would go in and sort of record your stuff in bulk. How long would it take you to record an average Mark Goodman shift on MTV?
Generally, about maybe 45 minutes.
Okay. Wow.
We would just do the wraparound segments, and we had, you know, five-hour shifts.
Yeah. I mean, because you guys were, as Preston and I were talking about this, you guys were the constant companion of anybody who was into music at that time. And I mean, you guys were always on.
I used to joke that I had in the time that I was there, which was basically 81 through 88, really, that I was on the air more time than Johnny Carson.
It's true.
Wow.
Yeah.
By the way, Mark, I see here that the book has a story in it about a $10,000 cross-country haircut that you had.
It's so stupid.
What is that?
You know, I mean, you would think, working at MTV, that you would never hear something like you would have heard from your high school principal.
Right.
Cut that hair. What's the matter with your hair?
Yeah.
And that was the deal. I had, you know, many people will remember, because I had it when I was living in Philly.
Yeah, the helmet head.
I had the Jufro.
Yeah, the Jufro.
I was rocking the Jufro.
Yeah.
And Bob Pittman and some of the others didn't like it. They said, you got to get it cut. I refuse. We fought. And they finally said, find somebody who you love who will cut your hair. I happened to be friendly with Ian Hunter at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And he has hair like mine.
Yes.
Jose Bear, who was a...
I remember
the
him.
The dude with the ponytail.
And the hat.
Stylist to the stars.
The he would cut, like, Cher's hair.
Yeah.
And he cut Ian Hunter's hair.
Yeah.
He has his salon in L.A. Yeah. So they had to fly me to L.A. first class. They had to put me up at the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Yes.
And on the day that I was supposed to leave, I lost my wallet, so I had no driver's license, so I couldn't rent a car. Yeah. And I told the VP, I can't go. I can't rent a car. And he was like, Pittman's going to kill me, man. You gotta go. You're going. And so they rented me a limo.
Yeah.
They picked me up at the Beverly Hills Hotel, took me over to the salon, waited for me for 7 freaking hours while I was in there agonizing over this haircut. Yeah. And then I went out partying with the limo all night. I mean, it was a great night.
Yeah. For a haircut.
Love that you did that. Well, listen, I'm dying to read the book. I want to see all these stories, because I know this. What a turbulent, awesome time.
Yeah.
In
pop
culture,
fun, and
music.
You know, and I hope that people like it. You get to know us better than ever. And JJ Jackson, who
legend,
way before we did all this, is represented in the book, and people have been digging it. I'm really delighted.
No, the reviews are great, and it's definitely one that a lot of people are going to want to pick up.
All right, thanks, Mark. Good luck with everything. All right,
love you, Mom.
Yeah. We love Mom
Goodman,
too.
Everybody. Yeah. See you later, man. He did have an awesome Jufro.
Complete Jufro, man.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Case, you know what you might try sometime soon is the classic Tom Papa look.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Because the receding thing just might work for you, right?
Well,
Tom Papa's here!
Yeah.
It's nice of you to point out that I've actually planned my receding. This is all by choice.
It's an active look that you've gone after. No one ever takes claim of that, and I think that's a new way to go. No, this is all. This was planned.
I could have less forehead, but I think the chicks like forehead.
Although I tell you what, Tom, Casey did what I still claim to be one of the greatest gifts that anybody has ever given me, and it was around Christmas time. And Casey went and he got his hair cut, like the full missing top part.
The male pattern baldness?
Grew a mustache. It was, I don't think I've ever laughed that hard in my life.
That is a great gift.
Tom, I have a question. You were just talking about your daughter's birthday today.
Happy.
Yes. And she's turning 8 years old?
Yes.
Happy birthday to me.
Yes, 8 years old today.
What's her name?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Yes.
That's a beautiful name.
Is that from Charlotte's Web?
No, she's actually reading that right now.
Okay, yeah.
Because she just learned to read. And she's a little slow, but she's eight. And it was my grandmother's name was Charlotte.
Okay. Oh, that's nice.
That's a name that's becoming popular.
Yeah.
Again. Well, I did see, and the reason I bring it up is they've come out with the top baby names of the year. This is according to the Social Security Administration yesterday. So this isn't a poll. This is
legitimately
the law. The most popular names. And when it comes to boy names, for the 14th year in a row.
Whoa.
There's been a leader?
There's been a leader.
For 14 years?
Would you, you're looking at it.
Jebediah.
You know, would you guess? Would you guys
Jacob.
Be able to guess? It is. It's
is
Jacob.
It?
Yes.
Jacob.
Well done,
Dad. Such a biblical name.
Well, I have my son has four friends that are named Jake.
Really?
And we have to call them by first and last name because there's no way to tell the difference.
Tom, my husband is a principal, and we always talk about names. Uh-huh. And it's like, I know the trend in names. He's like, oh, I have, 15 Sophias, 10 Olivias.
Yeah, right.
Olivia was pretty popular. By the way, Sophia is number one.
Is it really?
Yes.
Has that been women?
Wow.
Has that been number one a couple of years, too? Or at least up there. At least
Madison's been up there.
It's got to be because of the Golden Girls.
Yeah. So, it's got to be.
Imagine it. The stranglehold it has on pop culture.
But I'd like to start the campaign now for people to stop naming their sons Jacob.
Yeah.
There's going to be too many of them.
How about Moab?
Yeah.
My son's best friend's name is Jake, and straight up Jake. It's not Jacob or anything like that. It was just Jake.
That's good.
Yeah.
I mean, Jake is a name that neighbors across the street, their son is Jake.
I like it. I think it's a great name.
But Max is a good name.
There's going to be too many of them.
Especially if you're the driver for the Hearts.
Jacob, yeah. If you're what?
Heart to Heart, remember that?
Max.
There's Mrs. Hart. She's a piece of air. Oh, my God, what I
No, but I we were conscious of, when naming the kids, it was... what is really trendy, and then you think you're coming up with something original, and then it's like, oh, and then you meet five Charlottes at preschool, and you're like,
Did you put the names through the schoolyard punky kids test? Where how are they going to contort this?
No, it didn't really matter because our last name's Papa.
So
you're dead anyway.
What's your
other daughter's name?
Max.
Max Papa.
Maxine. No, she's Angelina.
Okay.
Angelina, which we took from the Louis Prima song. I ate antipasta twice just because she is so nice, Angelina.
That's great.
So we always love that song, we named her Angelina.
That's cute.
And if it was a boy, I wanted to go with Charlie. Okay. I always like that name.
You know, Charlie's a good name for girls, too.
Well, my Charlotte.
Gets Charlie.
You can call her Charlie. But every time I try, it gets shot down pretty quick.
It didn't go over well?
No. I'm not a boy.
What's wrong with you, Daddy?
Daddy, leave me alone. I'm not a boy.
Well, I'll give you the top 10 of the boys' names. It's Jacob, Mason, Ethan.
Mason?
Yes, James Mason.
That's right.
Then you have Noah, William,
Jeez.
Liam.
Everyone's so pretentious.
Jaden. There is a lot of...
Jaden is from Will Smith.
Jaden,
I think that's, but I'm surprised at the.
Wait, but that's Jaden is a boy?
Yeah.
I thought that was a girl's name.
No, Jaden is.
I think it can be.
What about Tom and Bob
and Steve?
Yeah.
Frank.
Doug.
Tony.
Doug.
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 Men.
Defiantly.
Guys with grease on their hands.
Yeah. Salt of the earth.
Jaden doesn't want to help us because he has a peanut allergy.
Dude. just described half the kids in the Delaware Valley.
Jaden can't get his car started because his battery ran out, and he doesn't know how to open the hood. Poor Jaden. Maybe Jacob could help. I don't know, guys. We're going to have to call Ethan. He doesn't know how to do it either, but his dad is in sales. And maybe he knows a guy.
God.
I know.
We're doomed.
If the Chinese ever try and take us over, we're just going to be like, all right, just give us a place to lay down. We're not going to fight. I can't be attacked. I can't fight the Chinese. They have gluten all over them. I can't do this. Where's Ethan?
Well, number 8 is Michael, and then 9 is Alexander, and then 10 is Aiden.
Yeah, a lot of them kind of
Ethan,
rhyme, too.
Aiden, Jacob, Mason, they all have that.
I think there was to be a brother, there would have been a brother between myself and my older brother who would have been a Bart.
Bart's good one. Yeah.
Steve and Bart.
Steve and Bart.
I could have been Bart.
But if you guys were playing baseball and the parents are out in the, up in the stands and you yell out, let's go, Steve, get a hit.
Right, yeah.
Come on, Bart, lay one down.
Yeah, yeah.
Aiden, do your best. Swing. Swing, Ethan, swing. It sounds more like you're cheering the Liberace movie.
Right. Well, you know, it doesn't matter now because everyone gets a trophy. Everyone wins. They don't keep score.
Right. It's all no special.
Yeah.
Is it game ball after every game?
Absolutely. Everyone goes to the pizza party.
Well, they all get a snack ticket after the games and practices now. That's kind of cool.
We would get our asses chewed out. I mean, you know, what the hell was that?
Yeah, you'd be humiliated.
Yeah, it would be as if you're being drummed out of the core.
Yeah, your dad would be like, look at those kids over there. You know why they have ice cream? Because they won. Now get in the car. No, you're not getting a soda. Get in the car. Now it's a big ice cream party.
Yeah, and everyone goes.
Everyone's like, we all have a chocolate sundae. Well, did you win, Ethan? No, we lost by 100 points. It was so humiliating. But this ice cream sandwich is delicious.
Oh my God, that is so right.
There's not even a sense of humiliation.
No. None.
It's just par for the course.
None.
Yeah.
You don't want it bad enough.
No. Yeah. Oh, no one's raised their kids like this. We're completely living their lives for them. And it's failing them. It's really failing them.
Sure.
There's reports of kids going to college now, and they're depressed because they don't know how to do anything for themselves. Mm. They're literally like, my bed's still not made. When I was at home, I'd get Mickey Mouse pancakes, and my bed would be made. Now, what is happening?
We just made fun of my brother. He's 22 years old, and we could hear him on the phone with my mom, and he wanted my mom to drive completely out of her way to come into the city to drop him off a black t-shirt because he couldn't find his black t-shirt.
22?
I picked up the phone. I was like, you live in the city. There's got to be a Walmart or a Target within, like, you know, arm's length of you.
Exactly.
Go and get a black t-shirt. He's like, put her back on the phone. I'm not talking to you.
I want my mommy to drop it off. I can get one at Banana Republic, but it won't smell like my mommy. That's ridiculous.
I'm not going to look right in law class.
Yeah. Oh, it's so ridiculous.
I won't look good for my job review.
Yeah, I'll get the t-shirt, but I won't get a good luck kiss from mom. How am I going to score in this meeting if I don't get a good luck kiss from my mommy?
Wow.
But Murph and Michelle here, they already have their baby name picked out, and I've never, ever heard of it before.
What's the name?
Yeah, say it.
Saoirse.
I have heard Saoirse.
Yeah, I know that name.
Yeah. I've never heard of it.
Try to spell it.
The movie Willow, one of the main characters' name was Saoirse.
And Return to Saoirse.
That's a good name. Saoirse, because there isn't another one.
Yeah.
It's like a unicorn.
Right.
Your child's going to be like a magical unicorn. I'm going to have a play date with Saoirse. Does he really exist? Sure you are, hon. You're going to play with Saoirse.
Well, growing up with a unique name, I did not like it until I became an adult. I hated being Preston. I didn't like it at all. I wanted to be John, Dave, Steve, Bill, Jeff.
But now...
That would be a long name, though.
But now you own it.
Now I own it.
Yeah, now it's like, you're damn right.
I'm appreciative of it.
I hated my name growing up because it rhymes with way too many derogatory words.
I always wanted to be Sarah. whenever I'd make like I call if I call my friend just to joke around, I'd be like, "Hi, it's Sarah."
Are you Kathleen? You're Kathleen.
I'm
right?
Kathleen. Yeah. Yeah. And I was actually just talking the other day with one of my friends. There's no little kids named Kathy. Most of them are Catherine or Kathleen, and they're called by their full name. Nobody really shortens like to Kathy anymore.
Mm, yeah. Mm. I wonder why.
Sarah. Yeah. See, there's no songs about Kathy.
Singing that song into your hairbrush as a kid.
Oh. You just hit it on the head.
What? What did I say? What did I say?
We have video of her singing to Belinda Carlisle.
Into a hairbrush. Yeah,
into a hairbrush.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. Used to put on shows in my living room.
Yeah, that kicks ass. I can see it.
All right, here you go. Show Tom the video.
I want to take another break. Tom Papa is hanging out with us.
Yes, indeed.
We'll be right back. Stay there.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Cage the Elephant.
Call me when you're ready to be real.
Larkin Poe. Rival Sons.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Because there was a woman that we met that had a, I guess, a secret to share with you.
Yeah, I mean, it was really bizarre how the topic had come up. She was wearing like a Winnie the Pooh sweatshirt. And I was, you know, asking where Piglet was because my daughter, you know, she's got this Piglet that she uses as like a whoopee type of deal. But she, you know, holds my daughter, who's four, holds Piglet's ear and then sucks her thumb with that same hand. And then the lady goes, yeah, I do that too. And I thought she was saying, oh, I used to do that. And I go, oh, you used initially. Like, no, I still do that. So this lady who is 45 years old still sucks her thumb all the time.
Like, she was there with her husband.
He verified. He backed it up.
He's like, yep, all the time. Mm-hmm. Sucks her thumb.
Like just out of curiosity, does she have like buck teeth or anything like that?
Okay. No. I mean, surprisingly not.
It's a rumor. Okay.
Yeah, I think the buck teeth thing.
She's cross-eyed, though.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I was a thumb sucker for a long time. It was just something that I couldn't shake. And then eventually I got braces. And the braces, you know, obviously moved my teeth. And my thumb just didn't work anymore. It just doesn't fit. And I've actually tried a couple of times just to see. It's just not the same.
It's just, okay.
I lost it.
And by the way, Steve, he was having a full-on conversation with this lady, and I heard you say it. You were like, man, I wish I could still do that.
I do.
Really?
Yeah, because you know what?
Do you wish you still sucked your thumb?
Any of you guys a thumb or finger sucker or anything?
No.
Not to the best of my recollection, but I can't remember anything before the age of 9.
I can't. Because you're a celebrity.
Right, now. That's right, yes.
No, I can't describe it, but there was just this odd sense of security that it would give me. And I, you know,
well, you were teething.
Well, no,
right?
No, listen, I sucked my thumb until 8th grade.
What?
Till 8th grade.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
Eighth grade, that's like 15 years old.
Yeah, no, it's 13. But regardless.
No, it's not. Well,
yes,
right.
It is.
14, 15.
Wow. 13,
anyway.
That's
13, I have a seventh 14. Grade who's 13. Anyhow.
I was 14 years old when I stopped.
Really?
Yeah. Well, actually, no, it was before. I was 13 when I stopped.
Would you ever lapse into it? Not realizing you were doing it in public?
In school?
Oh, yeah, I remember at one point I was in the playground. It was a field day, and I was just sitting there, like, totally zoned out, boom, just sucking my thumb, and I look over, and there are these sixth graders who are looking at me like,
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What are you looking at?
But there was a girl that I went all through high school
with. Can a 15-year-old suck his thumb?
She sucked her two fingers all the way, you know, we graduated in 93, and senior year.
That woman is Jenna Hayes.
No, she was, she would suck her fingers, who knows, maybe she still does, but at 18, she was sucking her fingers.
There are a lot of people texting in that say they do it. I'm 45, I suck my thumb too, don't say my name. My wife's 25, still sucks her thumb. There are a bunch of them coming in. This one says they stopped when they were 14.
I saw a on the TLC show, Preston. I guess that's all OCD stuff and you know, people who eat like sofa cushions and all that stuff. They had one woman who was doing it, and she would do things to stop herself, like put foul tasting things on her thumb, and she couldn't break the habit.
There was actually my my sister would bite her nails a lot, and there was a special nail polish.
Yes, I remember that.
Clear coat nail polish. It tasted horrible.
My cousins had to use it.
Yeah.
And so what's the taste?
It's just almost acidic.
Yeah.
And just foul, you know? I mean, it's just something that is unpleasant.
And it didn't,
in your mouth.
Did it work?
No. She still did it.
Wow.
Anyway. Yeah. Let me go to Amy. Hi, Amy. Good morning.
Hey, you guys are globs of fun.
We are globs of fun. Thank you.
What's happening, Amy?
So I did suck my thumb, and I don't really remember how old I was. I know that I got to when I was in grade school, I would not do it during the day. But when I would be asleep, I would do it without realizing it. So I started, I had to tape my thumb to my forefinger, and then I started sucking the other one. So I went through this whole process of having to tape my thumb to my forefinger, and then I would have my mom do the other one for me. And that's how I had to break myself of doing that.
Wow. How long did it take you to break the habit, do you think, Amy?
It seems like it was a few weeks. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I just quit doing, you know, I just had her keep doing it and doing it until I figured I wasn't doing it anymore at night.
Amy, let me ask you, like Casey said, for some reason, even though you were, how old were you when you?
I was in grade school, but I mean, probably was, I don't know, third or fourth grade.
Okay, so you're like 15.
That's not too bad. I was just wondering if you recall a sense of security that Casey is
reminiscing
about.
Well, I don't want to get into it. My kids listen.
Okay, all right.
Oh, okay.
No problem.
All right, so it's weird, and I don't know if Amy or anybody else can commiserate here, but, you know, so I would suck my thumb, but at night, no.
I'm sorry. No. The same hand. I'm sorry. I thought it was the other hand.
But at night, like if
look, I'm a teapot.
If I wanted to kick the thumb sucking into high gear, I would twirl my hair. And we're like, oh, God.
Well, you know what?
Oh,
my God. Stop Casey? And think about this, Casey.
Yeah.
That's infantile.
You have oral fixation.
But so what?
Yeah.
Like, no, and that's why, like, this lady I was talking to on Friday night, I was a little bit jealous of her. Because I don't see anything wrong with it.
Well, listen.
You're an adult.
So what? What's wrong with it?
His point is, if it gives you comfort.
Right.
And you're able to manage it.
Right.
Why would it be an issue?
Like, I have a friend who's
I understand what you're saying. From your point, you're like, wait a second. I'm an adult. I've elected to suck my finger simply because society indicates it's something kids do.
Right.
Do I have to stop?
I'm not wetting my bed or anything, you know. But, like, I have a friend who he likes to put his two fingers, he likes to put them in
the butt, right?
No. No!
Stop with that.
Nothing with the butt.
Okay.
With his pillowcase. So he likes to have the pillowcase in between his two fingers, and he, like, rubs it back and forth, and he's been doing that since he was a baby. And, you know, he's an adult now. It's sort of similar.
Steve, I think you got it right. It's what society says, that's what my reaction to Casey is. No, that's what babies do. You know,
and
it's same thing with like a stuffed animal. You know what I mean? Like I had a friend in college who still slept with a stuffed animal. Of course, we tortured her all through 4 years we were there. But
now was it? It was not simply the way girls just have stuffed animals on their bed.
No,
this girl had a security.
Security. It was what were those things? Care Bears. And we went away to spring break. We were four girls on spring break, wild partying, having a great time. And she would come home at night and snuggle with her Care Bear.
Wow, man. Wow.
I just, you know, Casey saying, so what? And yes, it's a society thing. But can you imagine an executive sitting at the boardroom table, and he's got a decision to make, and all of a sudden he's got to take a moment to think, and he starts sucking his thumb and twirling his hair.
It would be weird.
It'd be a little
what
weird.
If though with you know what I mean? With what about if because of the comfort that gives him, he makes an incredible decision that puts the company well ahead of the competition,
right? It just puts you into a good place. I really can't describe it.
I think you'd have a harder time dealing with butt stuff.
Right.
That would be in the boardroom.
Right.
Yeah. Let me go to Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys?
Good. What's happening?
Hey, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Oh, awesome.
I'm in my 50s, and I had one of my six roommates at college. She would, if you sat next to her, she would suck her thumb and reach over and play with your earlobe.
With your earlobe?
With our earlobe.
That's a little freaky.
It's kind of awesome.
And we weren't drinking or partying. She would do it stone cold sober. She would just reach over and play with your earlobe.
Now, that's just, come on, man. I mean, that's, you know, that's getting in your personal space. Did you guys say anything to her about it?
Well, we used to cry. crack up laughing and then not sit next to her.
All right.
That's it. Listen.
Did she seem a little off?
Now she's actually a very productive
maniac.
She's a school teacher now. I haven't talked to her in years, but I would venture to say that she is still sucking her thumb.
I think if you're doing it to yourself, you're sucking your thumb. You're playing with your own earlobe. When you reach over and start grabbing someone else's stuff,
yeah,
that's where it becomes assault.
But I just remember, as a thumb sucker, it was more of a problem for everybody else than it was for me. I remember my third grade teacher.
Of course it is.
She would
like
bribe
it.
Us, you know.
Well, since you say it provides you with comfort, what's prohibiting you from doing it now? And
it
could you, in fact, start like a cigar club, but for thumb suckers?
Right.
I'm going to go after work for a quick suck. I'll be home.
It's guys sitting around playing poker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're just sitting there with their cards in one hand and thumb in the other.
Craig Preston on a big...
Yeah, wait a minute. Double the blinds on this one.
A big leather Barca lounger with the Wall Street Journal.
I just stuck my thumb in my mouth and that felt weird.
Yeah.
Oh, it doesn't feel right anymore.
It
gives me a chill down my spine.
Everybody listening right now, if you're in the car, whatever, stick your thumb in the mouth.
I don't like it.
Go ahead. I just want people to look next to you and see you sucking on your thumb. I mean,
see, the bitch is, this is my butt thumb.
Yeah, go to your left.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
My initial reaction.
I don't like it.
If I were to see my kids or anything like that, it would be almost to smack their hand and say, stop that.
Stop it.
Don't do that.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. What are you doing?
And I don't know. I think it's cute.
And eventually, if you suck on it too long, it's going to get it all raw and stuff. Well, and
also,
nasty.
I think there's a point to be made here that the sucking of the thumb.
Mm-hmm.
The thumb needs, when you close down on your thumb, you're past the actual first knuckle, right?
Yeah.
You go all the way in.
All the way back.
So you're hitting the more tender part of the thumb as opposed to the calloused, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And why are you looking at me? I don't suck my thumb.
Come on, Kat.
I mean, it does fit in there nicely.
It fits perfectly.
I don't like it, though.
But, Preston, you said then it'll get deformed. My niece, who is only one at this point, basically the doctors have told her that her nail will never grow correctly now because of it. I mean, she sucked her thumb constantly, that it's raw, it's torn apart, and now the nail is basically deformed.
Kathy, there was a text that came in and said they used to suck their thumb until their nail fell off.
Yeah, well,
and that's when they quit doing it.
Kind of like
why
hers.
Did your nail fall off?
Because you kind of gnaw on it a little bit, or it's just wet all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's going to cause some problems. And plus, there's a mild bit of, you know, in your saliva, I mean, it's made to break down food.
Yeah, well, and think about when you're in the shower, your nails get softer.
It's true.
So, you know, if it's constantly moist.
Let me go to...
No, I can't believe I used that word.
You said moist.
Constantly moist.
She brought up something, though. My little thing is that I will, a lot of times, I don't do the thumb sucking, but in the shower, I will eat the hair in that trap.
And
Hi, Vanessa.
Hey,
you're on the air. Hey, thank you, Vanessa. What's happening?
Choking right now.
We were in California years ago visiting my mother-in-law's family, and her cousin had, he was either two or three, he used to have to sit on his mother's lap and suck her thumb to go to bed.
He would suck his mother's thumb?
Yes. He would sit on her lap and suck her thumb every time he had to go to bed or take a nap.
That's something that the mom let happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because, you know, you talk about, like, binkies and teething stuff. You know, if you start letting your child suck on your fingers,
come on,
then they're going to do it.
It answers a question that I had, which was, for me...
Do birds fly upside down?
Was it a thumb thing or a mouth thing?
What do you think it is?
It's obviously a mouth thing. Yeah.
But also, would you say that with cigarette smoking or things over the years, that's an oral fixation, correct?
Yes, possibly, yeah.
Okay.
And you
pick your nose a lot, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's another that's another fixation that you have.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. let me see here. Which one? Do you want me to go thumb-sucking or security blankets?
Well, yeah, because we've got a bunch of adults who still sleep with blankets.
All right, we'll go to some of those. Let me go to Megan. Hey, Megan, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Kat Zooks.
What's happening, Megan?
Not much. I actually was a thumb-sucker with a security blanket. Probably until I was in fourth or fifth grade.
Yep.
I actually used to paint my nails except for my thumb that I used to suck. But that's also how I quit sucking my thumb, is I would paint my thumb, stop sucking my thumb. But I still sleep with a security blanket.
You still sleep with a security blanket?
The
okay.
Same one?
I'm not a fan, but I don't like snuggle with it, but it's under my pillow at all times.
Well, wait, Megan, is this one you've had for years?
Yes, it's actually one I had when I was born.
when you were born.
Wow. Yeah. So it's 25 years old.
Do wow. Do you take it on vacations with you?
I do not.
Okay. Do you send it on vacation by itself?
It did go to college with me, and I still had it for a while. After. Right. I mean, I still have it now.
So you could sleep without it then.
I could, yeah. But for okay. some reason it brings me comfort, especially thunderstorms. I do not like thunderstorms.
Do you get thunderstorms? Thunder, buddy. Do you get nervous when it's not there?
In certain situations, sometimes, yeah. If I'm by myself, I usually have it. Right. Out.
Say you were in bed and there was a masked gunman in the room. Would you be nervous if the blanket wasn't there?
The blanket would save me from a
mask. Okay, all right. No, it's weird how that happens.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, when you do end up going away to college, you have to hide that thing because if the other people find out about it becomes a target and people will joke.
Oh, it was hidden in my pillowcase when I was in college.
It was hidden, so no one ever knew. Did you never told anyone?
No.
And would you have been totally embarrassed if someone had found out?
Probably.
But not embarrassed, but people would probably try and take it. And, like, hide it from you and stuff.
Yeah, probably.
That's
yeah.
the beauty of the thumb.
Well, yeah.
You can't take that away. Yeah. Down. Yeah.
Unless you get hooked up with the mob.
And your butt. It's always there.
I got to tell you, in my household, you know, my youngest, she's got her thumb, but she's also got this piglet. And some nights, man, it is such a pain in the ass because we don't know where Piglet is. And she can't go to bed without Piglet. We have Piglet, too.
Have you
but
ever
Piglet, too, doesn't really cut the mustard.
Have you ever been able to pull off her going to sleep without Piglet?
Very, very rarely.
Yeah, see, I'm Casey, while I commiserate, and if it's bedtime and we can't find it, I'm like, look, you're going to have to sleep without it tonight. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Good night. I'm going to bed.
Oh, daddy's a dick.
Sorry, man. You know? Daddy needs to sleep.
Well, you know what,
though? Entertain thousands of people.
Casey.
Daddy's a star, hon.
You said,
I hope you understand.
You said that the second piglet isn't, even though it's the same thing, it's not as good. And it's so true. We have Monkey, and I bought a couple of them just for that reason, in case it got lost.
Yes, I'm here to see Jay's.
Or whatever. But it's not the same. It's not as worn. And, yeah, he doesn't like it as much.
I don't remember what if I had a Whoopi or a toy that was my favorite thing to bring to bed. I don't. Do you remember?
Oh,
did you have anything?
Mine was a Sesame Street blanket.
No, I never had any of it. I didn't suck my thumb. I didn't suck my finger. But my youngest brother, Josh McElwain, who works at the Realtor Landscaping, he sucked his pointer finger. And he had a Snoopy blanket. And Casey, much like Piglet, he would lose them.
Oh.
And so my dad one time drove to like Bordentown, New Jersey, to find a replacement because he was throwing a fit. And when we moved, when we finally moved out, they were like 8 Snoopy blankets underneath his bed, like tucked away in the corner. You know, they just fell behind somewhere. But yeah.
So you were able to pull the switcheroo where he would accept that it was the Snoopy blanket in question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me go to Dustin. Hey, Dustin, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, what's happening, Dustin?
Yeah, my girlfriend is 25. Well, my fiance, sorry. She got this blanket when she was young, and she sniffs it, she huffs it, she rubs it on her lips. She does all kinds of weird stuff
what?
With that thing.
Still?
It's very strange.
Dustin, is she a freak in the sack?
No comment.
No comment.
That's a yes.
There's it's tactile. It's yeah, I get it.
Steve, I had Marissa grab this clip from the movie The Producers.
I love it.
My blue blanket.
Give me my blue blanket. Is he sucking his thumb?
No, he's
rubbing it on his face.
It's his blanket. And Sarah Mostel is looking at him.
It's his security blanket.
I'm sorry. I don't like people touching my blue blanket. It's not important. It's a minor compulsion. I can deal with it if I want to. It's just that I've had it ever since I was a baby, and I find it very comforting.
I love the beginning of that.
And my blanket! My blue blanket! Give me my blue blanket!
He tries to calm him down. He's in the corner screaming, and he goes, and he goes, I'm angry. I'm out of control. I'm out of control. And he throws the water in his face. He goes, I'm wet. I'm wet, and I'm out of control.
My blanket, my blue blanket. Give me my blue blanket.
He's just rubbing it all over his face.
I guess that's right in line with what we're talking about.
Yeah, let me go to Scott. Hey, Scott, good morning.
Hey, guys.
What's up, buddy?
Rock and roll.
Hey, as a kid, I used to sleep with one of those baby blankets that had satin on it, and I rubbed it between my fingers, loved it, the coolness
of
it.
Did you say it had patent on it?
Satin.
Oh, here's your blanket. When you stick your hand into your best friend's blanket, then you'll know how to fight, because it's got satin on the edge. Feels so good. Where's my woman?
No.
Okay, so satin. I know you. Those stuff made for kids is so
soft
and nice.
Exactly. So when
goddamn
it was cool,
right,
you'd rub your fingers through it. It was great. So then I got away with it, grew up, and this and that. So got married, and my wife used to hear so much about it because I used to tell her I love the satin. I used to rub it through my fingers. So one year at Christmas, as a joke, she gets me a baby blanket with satin. Now I'm addicted to the damn thing, and I can't get rid of it. I sleep with the damn thing.
You have a new one, Scott.
Yes, I have a new one. I'm 42 years old. It's pretty sad and pathetic.
Scott, if it helps you sleep, as to Casey's point, what's wrong with it? If you enjoy it and it provides you a secure sleep and you feel good about it, roll with it.
Now that I'm okay with. I just the sucking the thumb thing.
What about crapping in your pants?
I have an issue with
that. That I don't do anymore.
Okay.
I stopped that about two years ago.
All right.
Thank you, Scott. For your 40th birthday, you vowed.
I'm making changes.
Thank you, Scott. Now I had my security blanket when I was a kid had a little satin trim on it, and I loved it. It was it. It was so soft. It was pleasurable to the touch.
Yeah,
it was nice.
It brings back memories. I mean, memories before you're probably even able to fully remember. You know, everything.
Hang on, let me go to Michaela here real quick. Hi, Michaela, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's happening?
Nothing much, driving to work.
Well, nice. What? Tell us your story.
Yeah, I just wanted to share, I come from a family of thumbsuckers, and my husband was actually a thumbsucker. Mm-hmm. He still twirls his hair, especially when he, relaxes, when he sits down to watch TV or just stops in his tracks.
He constantly
twirls his hair.
Does he suck his thumb and twirl his hair simultaneously?
He doesn't suck his thumb anymore.
Okay.
But, he's 34, and my dad is 58, and he still scratches the blanket when he's watching television like he did when he sucked his thumb.
Huh.
And my little brother was a thumb sucker, and like you were talking about the nails, his one thumbnail is completely different from the other one because he sucked his thumb.
From chronic sucking.
I believe that. Yeah.
Right. I'm a pediatric nurse. So I, as far as, the social stigma, I feel like, if it gives you comfort, you can't take a thumb away. So, why not?
So you're on board with the notion that even if you're an adult and you want to suck your thumb.
I think that you can stop yourself in public, but I think, the blanky thing. And if it gives you comfort and helps you sleep, why not?
Okay.
Even with my kids, I don't take their binkies away. My daughter's 4. I don't let her suck it in public, but at nighttime, if it puts her to sleep, she's getting it.
I'm racking my brain. I'm really having a hard time coming up with a good reason for people not to suck their thumbs as adults. I can't other than societal pressure.
Yeah.
What's wrong with it?
If you go and you clean your hand and you set Preston, but would you, let's say you don't do it all the time. You have your thumb sucking club where you go to after the other guys are there and you walk in. I mean, sure. Hey, good to see you. in the background, you talk about sports, but no one understands each other because their thumbs are in their mouth.
I just think it's infantile.
There are a lot of things that are infantile.
Like what? That we still do outwardly.
I don't know, wearing a diaper to work and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of other infantile things that we do, but
we all throw tantrums, and maybe not in an infantile way, but I was thinking about this yesterday. I saw this kid who I was at my son's football party was last night. And this kid was walking out. He's like, I wanted to do this again. And I was like, this little kid. And I'm like, wait a second.
I do that.
I do that from time, especially. And I was thinking of it this way. If you're at a bar with your spouse, and this has happened to me, many times, where it's 10 o'clock, I still want to stay. My wife says, no, it's time to go. Well, I want to go. I want to do a shot before I leave.
Do you cry on the floor so she has to drag you out?
No.
Dude, my absolute favorite kind of tantrum, though, and I'll have to do a demonstration of this here in the studio, is the simultaneous. It's like miniature jumping, and the head bobs up and down like, I know. when they start banging, that cracks me up.
Especially the adults.
Oh, God.
I kicked the pillow last night. I had a little mini tantrum last night. I kicked the pillow.
Get out. Yeah. Get out of here, pillow. I don't know. So you're actually making a case, Nick, for thumb sucking?
No, I'm not. Like, it's not for me.
He's saying he's understand finding it hard to find a reason to not. If it floats your boat, right?
I'm trying to figure out a reason why it's wrong.
I don't know. Somebody pointed out that I eat scabs, so you know I'm a hypocrite.
Well, yeah. The scab it would be along the line of the I think thumb sucking, nose picking. Yeah. It's the same deal.
It's probably not good for your thumb. It's probably not good for your teeth or your gum line. But like there are plenty of neither smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, I don't know.
And we allow that in society.
Can you go to line 7? Because I don't know if that's true or not.
What the hell?
All righty. Let me do that. I'm going to go to Eddie. Eddie, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing? You guys rock.
Hey! Eddie, what did you want to admit to us?
So my mother used to get silk lingerie, and I would always go in her closet and steal it. And she would come into bed when I was asleep in the bedroom, and I would have it in my mouth, suck it on it. I would have 3 or 4 different pieces of lingerie at one time.
So you would suck on your mother's lingerie?
Yes, I would steal it out of her closet, brand new lingerie, expensive stuff, just because it was silk.
Hey, your name is Eddie. Is that short for Oedipus by any chance?
No, but I did that, man, up until I was about 9 years old.
Wow, so and so she would... She apparently, after a while, realized there were teeth marks and wet spots on all her lingerie, correct?
After a while, she just stopped even trying to take it from me because I would have 4 or 5 of them bundled up with me. And one of them, she told me one night, she came in and she seen a piece of it hanging out of my mouth. And when she kept pulling it out, she said the whole thing came out.
It was like a magic trick.
Yeah, pretty much.
Did she ever come in and say, it doesn't have to stop there?
Oh, my God, Steve!
Stop!
Hey, by the way, Eddie, do you have a thing about lingerie?
No, I don't.
As an adult, you don't have a sexual attraction to it?
I'll eat an occasional pair. But
love it's messed up, but yeah.
All right. Thanks, Ed.
Well, then,
I appreciate
it. Go to number 2 then, Preston.
Yeah, I definitely want to do that. I have an anonymous caller on line 2. Hi, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Gadzooks.
Gadzooks. All right, what'd you want to tell us?
I used to know a girl who used to sleep with, it's the same thing, she used to sleep with a pair of her mother's silk underwear.
At what age are we talking here?
I mean, we're talking all through middle school and possibly some of high school, I would definitely say.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she would, what would she do with it? Where would she like?
I think it started when she was a baby. She just pulled a pair out of the, it was clean. I mean, she pulled a pair out of the clean laundry and she would just sleep with it against her face because she liked the feeling of it. But
I can see that. I couldn't fall asleep unless my mom was sitting on my face, so.
I always just thought, couldn't she just give her a blanket or something?
Yeah, buy a silk blanket.
Something that was a silk blanket. Yeah, you would think. Right. But sometimes maybe it's the fact that it's your mother's underwear that makes, like, maternal, right?
Maybe.
And the fact that it might be.
It's constantly moist.
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe I said that word.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It's constantly moist.
Oh. Clear as day.
Yeah.
That's clean. One last call, because I have a pathologist.
By the way, you notice nobody's putting their dad's shorts on their face.
Hi, Melissa, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm a speech-language pathologist.
Oh, okay.
And I was just listening, and Preston said something like, you can't see why adults, any reason other than the social piece. Why,
no, that
why
wasn't me. That was Nick. I'm totally against thumb-sucking by adults, yeah?
Okay.
Go ahead.
It really is terrible for your teeth and it's terrible for your speech. And there's so many parents walking around letting their kids suck their thumbs or with binkies till like age 5, which is just ridiculous. And they all have frontal lisps. They all need dental work.
But you know what? Sylvester Stallone had a binky, and there's no issue. He speaks completely fine.
By the way, it's harder, Melissa. I can't just say, if you got a 5-year-old and they're sucking their thumb, and you may have tried many, many times to keep them from doing this, and it's easier said than done.
You're
because
right.
I mean, like you're saying, you can take a security blanket away, but you can't take the thumb away. So
I had a cousin who sucked her thumb till she was like 13, and I remember them painting her thumb with like disgusting tasting stuff. And it is hard. I'm not, and I'm you know, you feel like a real jerk taking the binky away, and I don't know how you stop the thumb sucking, but it's got to stop. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
You better draw the line somewhere.
Okay.
Thank you, Melissa. I appreciate it.
Do they make binkies that are actually like rubber thumbs?
Probably. Tell you what, they now make really funny binkies. I don't know if you've seen them with these mouths.
The mouths, they're hilarious.
God, I wish they had those when my kids were babies.
Yeah, my niece has one. She's got like crazy like hillbilly teeth.
Oh my God. I would love to see that. That's hilarious.
So funny. What a great idea. All right, well, anyhow. All right, well, you know, there's a lot of people who still the thumb sucking.
There you go.
These pictures of the binkies. Look at the one with the mustache.
The one upper right, Preston.
Those are brilliant. What a great idea. All right. Well, anyhow, thank you for sharing the stories. We appreciate that. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in a second. Stay right there.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Our guests have been brought in here. We're very excited about this. They are here in our studio to talk about machete kills. Please welcome, ladies and gents, Danny Trejo and Alexa Vega.
Yay!
Philadelphia.
What up, guys?
Good to see you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Heck yeah. Thank you for having us.
Well, listen, Danny, I have to tell you, as soon as the trailer came out for this movie, Steve and I, 5 o'clock in the morning, were in our office watching this thing, and we were just howling with laughter because it's so insane, and it's
what it's supposed to be. Robert Rodriguez does violence in a way that's poetically funny.
That's a great way to put it.
And it's classic grindhouse fun. He does, but not a lot of people make movies like this. I love the original Machete.
Yeah, but, yeah, it was really fun.
We were talking about the sort of lineage. Machete, the character, goes back to the Spy Kids movie. Yeah. Uncle Machete was you. You were in those the film. And at what point, I guess, the trailer was made for the movie Grindhouse. I thought it was hilarious.
You know, we were doing Desperado.
Right.
93 or 94. Robert came up and said, "Hey, I got a character. I want you to do. You're perfect for it. You don't even have to act. Just show up." And
right, yeah.
Then we just talked about it. So when we did the Spy Kids, we said, "Hey, let's call him Uncle Machete." So that's where I met Alexis. He was like 11 years old.
Yeah.
So when she tried to come on to Machete Kills, she had to really fight for it because we still see her as a little spy, a little girl.
Yeah.
Out in the outside.
Danny, that's changed a lot.
Yeah. Has it ever?
That's changed immeasurably.
But she really had to fight for this role. She had to, you know, convince Robert that she wasn't 12 anymore.
Do you know the great thing, though, is with Robert Rodriguez movies, the women are always very powerful.
Wow.
Yes.
They're badasses. Yeah. They can be sociopathic. You are. Your character's killjoy, right?
Yeah, my character's pretty crazy. I've never played anything quite like this, you know, in the business, making that transition from child actor to, you know, more grown-up actor. It's so tough, and you kind of have to tiptoe through that transition. And when Killjoy came up, you kind of have to go all in or else you can't pull that character off.
Sure. I mean, because it's almost operatic in the way that, you know, the presentation is, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, those chaps.
Did you have a hard time, though, because you do have Danny, who was familiar with you as a kid, Robert, who's familiar with you as a kid. You know, a lot of times in a brotherly way, they mean, "Oh, no, you can't be this.
It's like having 60 parents on set because Robert uses the same crew over and over again as well. So everybody, the moment I pull that robe off, they're like, "Put it back on." I mean, everybody's screaming at me.
Being a dad, when your daughter walks out in a bikini the first time, "Hey, there's no way you're in there. Are you crazy?" And it's like, it was amazing, but she honed it. You know, she like was comfortable, made everybody else comfortable.
You have to be as confident as possible, because I knew if I hesitated at all, Robert would have sent me back.
If she would have been embarrassed, it'd been all over.
You know, it's funny because, Danny, when I see you in a movie, I know I'm going to have a good time. You've been a staple of so many, you know, just great pop culture movies, and your life. I'm just encouraged and fascinated by your life. You obviously spent some time in prison. You turn that around. Would you have ever, where you were before, have imagined that you'd be in movies with Robert De Niro and where you are right now. It's just got to amaze you every day of your life.
I never thought I was going to get out of prison.
Yeah.
You know, so all this is just God's time, really. Yeah,
right, like, right.
I remember when everybody was talking about the millennium, and are you afraid of the millennium, and are you kidding? I wasn't supposed to get out of the 60s, so.
Yeah,
know,
right, like, right.
It's all charity.
It was all barred. Yeah, that's all. It's awesome. And these films just celebrate a type of filmmaking that's gone. We were talking about this. I guess we were saying Machete Kills is 10 times Machete. So
yeah. Oh,
if,
yeah.
if you liked it, there was a little bit of a political message to the first one. This one is just
it's a wild ride. So yeah. Much fun. And the cast members we have in this film.
Mel Gibson.
You know what? Everybody really wants to work with Robert.
Yeah.
He's amazing. And you know you're coming to have a good time. And it's and it's like even for a cameo, they're not like how do you say it?
There's no ego on set. It's very comfortable. And
I'm trying to think of how to say this. It's every cameo is still a role. It's not mm-hmm. just.
It's not a
just,
throwaway.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Yeah. And that's what's beautiful about it. I mean, Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
She was awesome. You know what I mean?
And just to pull out that collection of people and say, okay, they're all in one movie together is brilliant and insane at the same time.
Have you ever looked at the casting of the Spy Kids movies?
Yeah.
They are star studded, over the top. You can't believe you're like, oh my God, Selma Hayek. Oh my, and Bill Paxton. What's he doing there?
Sylvester Stallone.
I mean, Sylvester Stallone, just name. The guy has got to be, he's got to be so charismatic to get everybody on board for this stuff.
But everybody wants to work with him. He's like, yeah. And it's like, you know, like I'm blessed, you know, that we became, you know, like really good friends when we were like in Desperado and hit it off. And like when he says, I've got a role for you, Daddy. It's perfect. You don't even have to act.
I think he coined the phrase Mexploitation, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, you know what I mean? Mexploitation film.
Did you find out on the film Desperado that you're related to?
Yeah, my cousin.
You're related to Robert?
My uncle came down from San Antonio. My family came down to visit me. We were in Acuña, Mexico. And you usually go to Mexico to pick up booze. And
right.
Because everybody can bring back 2 quarts of booze, so you take the kids you fill up your bar like that.
Yeah.
And so him and Robert started talking and realized that we were second cousins.
That's wild.
Oh my gosh.
That's wild. So you're basically, you know, the way Martin Scorsese had De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio, you're sort of a good luck charm for him as well.
Yeah, we did pretty good.
Yeah, that is cool. Alexa, did he walk you down the aisle for your...
He did. You know what's so funny? Robert's always been in my life during the most pivotal moments. I mean, he bought me my car when I was 16. He walked me down the aisle. He also walked me through that divorce. Like, he really was there for me throughout the whole time, which is why I think it was so hard for him to let me do this role, because he really has been that father
figure. Very protective,
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But,
are you engaged again?
I am.
I just saw the ring on your... I could not see the ring.
You gotta see the ring. This was a keeper.
It's pretty massive. He did a great job. I really like tiny rings. So, and I told him, I didn't know we were going to get engaged, but like he'd play around with the idea every now and then. I'm like, babe, I'm really small, like a petite little thing. And he's like, what kind of man would that make me? I'm like, wow, he really went there. But wait, I have to geek out for a moment because when I walked in here, I saw that Steel Panther was on your wall and that they had come in. I have been to, I think, probably 20 of their shows.
I am an unofficial member of Steel Panther.
They
let me get up and jam with them whenever they come to
town.
Tommy Thompson is what Satchel named me.
Nice.
So that's my name whenever I play with the band.
20 shows you've seen?
I've seen about 20. When they were at the Roxy, I used to watch them there a lot.
They're awesome.
Then they moved over. Gosh, you know what's so funny? I don't know how many people know about the history of that band, but the names they had before they got to Steel Panther were quite interesting. Not necessarily the radio.
Not radio friendly. No. Yeah, we're familiar. Well, just even some of their song titles. It's wild to see them. They come in and they performed a lot here in the studio.
Oh, wow.
So when they do, they live edit. It's funny to watch them do that.
No way. You have a photo right here. Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
That's me with the...
Yeah, he's jammed with them, like, what, three times now?
Yeah.
So awesome. Have you seen Steel Panther, Danny?
Yeah,
they're cool. Nuts.
Well, we got to tell them next time. They're here. Have you been on stage with them before?
Never, never.
Really?
I used to just go in and just watch them. I mean, they're... It's such a hoot. Such a hoot watching those guys.
Oh, that's awesome.
Danny, he's talking about, you know, the Steel Panther show. They'll bring up celebrities and so on and so forth. Does it ever amaze you who is a fan of yours? Because you're such a part of so many... Great movies.
You know what? I was at a concert with Gore. And they called me up. Yeah, they called me up.
That's
wild. They were talking about, this is a big fan. We're big fans. You know, okay.
Yeah.
They were cool, though.
That's hilarious.
One of the great things in the trailer for Machete 2 is Sofia Vergara, obviously. she's a big nemesis in this. And the weaponry... That she wields.
Her accessories.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's the penis gun from Dust to Dawn.
Yes, absolutely. It is.
Yes, Tom Savini wore that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was from Tom. And, you know, Robert just wanted to make her just badass. So he did. He, gave her a... Breast guns.
Bra machine guns. Yeah. Machine guns.
And he reuses people, props, everything. Robert likes to make, they're like home movies.
All right, so let's, the storyline, what can you tell us to set up for the film? What happened?
Well, the storyline is that the bad guys are trying to blow up the world to colonize Mars.
And they have a missile.
Yeah, they got a bunch of them.
They got a miss, and so you're hired by the president, who is
Carlos Estevez.
Carlos Estevez in the movie,
absolutely.
Yeah. To right,
go he says, you know, we can't go down there, but Machete can.
Yeah.
Know, so.
Machete is in the classic tradition of the loose cannon, the loner, plays by his own rules. And I would have to say the most cinematically amazing decapitations I've ever seen.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
You know, if you look, it's kind of under the genre of like James Bond and Star Wars.
Sure.
And, you know, that's all Robert. You know, Robert is a fan of movies. So that's when you go, you're going to see a fan's movie.
There are little homages that he puts in there for the people that have followed him all the way from Mariachi on, and which is great.
Well, you know, when we had that car, I remember Robert, you know, we have this car that's all kind of an armored vehicle. And so it was kind of, you look at it, it's kind of like Road Warrior.
Yeah.
And so he said, I got to figure out how to put mail in this thing. You know?
Yeah, yes.
And so.
And you know what? Obviously, from the first Machete film, the first time I saw the scene with the entrails, the intestines. Yeah.
There's a couple of those in there.
Yeah, I know. And because that was the money shot of the first movie.
That's his
Robert
thing.
Robert went and took it and did it again.
And it worked.
Times 10 with the helicopter. And I mean, it's brilliant. It's fantastic.
This movie kind of makes the first one, Machete, something that you could take the kids
to. Oh, my gosh.
Like, that's how far.
Didn't you say you were amazed that, like, sometimes kids will come up to you? And and it's like, what?
Well, like, 10 years old, whoa, I loved you in that movie, Machete. But you know what? It's so funny. It's like, now, you know, it's a lot different.
Yeah,
it's
just
a lot different. It's like kids can just see anything they want now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I mean? So, and I think now kids are a little more... I don't know, educated as far as, you know, fake movie stuff.
And, they're a little more mature when it comes into to what what they consume. Well, Alex, I was reading, I guess your first movie that you saw of Robert's outside of being acting in the movies was Desperado. Was that
that was the first one I'd ever seen of his. And you know, when you're younger, you don't really, I don't want to say that you don't appreciate it because you're having a lot of fun, but you don't really realize the people that you're working with. Not until I look back at the projects that we've all done together, I'm like, holy cow, Antonio Banderas, Sylvester Stallone. I mean, the caliber of cast that he can pull together is just so incredible that I almost wish I could go back now and just like soak it in. Because when you're a kid, you don't care. You just want to play with the gadgets.
Right. That had to be a blast. And that shows you the diversity of what this crew and what you guys as an ensemble can pull together. And wonderful kids movies
that also
catered to adults who
and
enjoyed
my
it.
My Uncle Machete. So he's literally in my phone as Uncle Machete, which is, really? That'll never go away.
It's funny, in Spy Kids, he never told you the stories about how he ripped the entrails out of people.
I know.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. It's like when we did, Robert talked about that, and then he said, well, let's put this in, we'll call Uncle Machete when Spy Kids. And then when he had doing Grindhouse, They said, you know what, let's do this trailer, even if we don't do the movie. When we came out of doing Grindhouse, everybody just attacked us. You know, hey, you've got to do this movie.
Yeah.
Even more than Grindhouse, you've got to do this movie. So the movie actually, Machete, came from audience demanding it. And then now this one's the same thing, you know. So
It's a weird thing because the trailer demanded a movie. Yeah. Whereas, usually the movie, you look to put together a great trailer.
Right.
And this can be, you can be basically a John McClane type character. I mean, you know, there's talk of sequels, I know. In fact, it's referenced in the movie itself. So.
Well, he sets it up so that he has the option, and really it's up to the audience. But the whole space idea, I don't know, I'm curious to see what Space Chaps would look like.
So are we.
Danny, while you're here, I have to ask you about the movie Heat, because it's one of my all-time favorites. And spoiler alert, you don't do so well towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
What was shooting that scene like? And because you're barely audible as you got the snot beat out of you. But it's a really intense scene, too. But you really have to focus and listen in on what's going on in that scene with De Niro.
You know what? Robert De Niro asked me,
yeah.
You know, what do you think, Danny? How are you going to shoot this? You know, we were just sitting there and waiting for it. And I said, I don't know, Bob. What do you think? And he said, well, I think you're already dead. I think you're every breath you take, you're gone a little more.
Right.
And then he looked at me and said, what do you think of that? And just for a split second, I wanted to say, no, Bob, that's not how I feel. This is Taxi. You know,
yeah.
This is Cape Fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the guy.
Right.
I said, you know, Bob, we're on the same page.
You should have just freaked him out and said, you know, that's adorable that you think that.
No, wait, let me. My son, Gilbert, when he first, we were doing Heat, and my son came, he was 9 years old, and he came on the set to visit, and I introduced, hey, Bob, this is my son, Gilbert. And said, hi, Gilbert. My son looked him right in the eyes and said, you talking to me?
Oh my gosh.
That's great.
Oh no.
That's cool.
And he died. He couldn't. And then he said, I said, Gilbert, you didn't see that movie. He said, the Comedy Channel. You know, everybody that imitates Robert De Niro.
Sure, yeah.
Right.
They're friends.
So you guys were at the Flyers game last night, but you also did a Q&A after the movie.
Yeah.
And our video producer, Nick Murphy, he's the one who hosted it.
Awesome. Hey, Nick, what's up?
And he is so bummed because Robert Rodriguez is his favorite director of all time. Mm-hmm. And so he's bummed that he couldn't be here this morning. But how did it go last night?
It went great.
Yeah,
I think Q&A it was received well. Yeah,
yeah. I think the audience loved it. So that's all we care about. It was great.
The audience, you know, they know what you're up to, and for people who think you know that you need to listen, you can jump right in. You get it. It's fun filmmaking. You guys, when you do you get nervous when you're watching an audience watch the film, or when you get, you know, or are you good with that? Or
I mean,
how are you?
It's so funny because when you look at a Rodriguez audience, it is the most eclectic, diverse group.
Yeah.
I mean, so many different types of people come and watch it. But no, for the most part, they're always so excited. I mean, fans of Rob, he has such a stylized way of making films that, I mean, if you love that style, you're going to love the movie regardless. And we're describing this film as cartoonishly provocative. And what was the funny one? I can't remember the other one. There was like
A description of the movie?
Somebody said it the other day. I was like, oh, gosh, that's the perfect.
Funny or something.
It was like, that's the perfect description.
I mean, I would call it a classic grindhouse movie. I mean,
completely.
It's entertainment. Please don't go for literary.
So you don't have to have read the book.
It's so funny. It's like, I mean, when you know, you can find, like a political statement in The Littlest Mermaid, if you're looking for
sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, what about the pollution in the ocean?
Oh, my gosh.
But it's just for entertainment. Get a big bag of popcorn, get some chocolate-covered raisin, mix them, and go for it.
I love that.
Alexa, when you were answering that last question, Danny was looking at you. It looked like he was going to murder you. I swear to God.
Oh, no.
Do you get that? like, you know, honestly, if you weren't an actor, I think people would just generally be afraid of you.
I was like just really listening.
Yeah.
You know, just,
but it looked like you were plotting. Like, okay, should I rip her ears off first? Or?
No, this guy has the craziest fans because they run up to him with machetes for him to sign. It's like if I had fans that ran up to me with machetes, I think I'd cry.
I got to tell you, I bought a machete to cut. I got a machete at home. I wish I had brought it.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Danny, there's something empowering about a machete, isn't there?
Yeah.
I have to ask you about your comedic sensibility. You're really funny, and you have a good sense of timing. And I keep referencing, we've been talking about having you come in. You just slay me in Anchorman as the bartender's little cameo. It's your reaction and to him, and he's there.
He's awesome.
Was that a blast?
That was a blast. Yeah. I mean, right now I'm doing a sitcom with George Lopez called St. George, and me and that guy just have so much fun.
Oh, that's great.
He's funny, and I just try to make him laugh, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so everything I say, he says, hey, we'll put that in the show. So he's like, we're doing all right.
Any desire on your own? I mean, your own story could be something. Any desire?
Mm-hmm. Gloria's over there.
My agents, they're trying to get me to write a book, but I don't sit still long enough.
Well, she's right. Yeah, because to me, just doing some research on you, compelling, and I think that story would do a lot of good for a lot of people.
Heck yeah.
Thank you.
It's just very, very cool.
Alexa, have you done any, like Maxim or anything like that approach you to do cover shoots or anything?
You know what? It's so funny. They have approached us, but my publicist said that it is not the time for that.
Wow.
So I was like,
yes,
wow.
It is. Yes, it is.
I'm like,
is your publicist a guy or a girl?
I feel weird because it's like your dad is there, your uncle Machete is there, and we want to say, yes, it is the time.
He's such a flirt that way. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. You know what? Like I said, it all baby steps. When making that transition, you have to be really careful not to alienate the audience that was so kind to you growing up.
Gorgeous, she's also really smart. Because if you've watched, like, the young girls that have tried to make that transition and boom, they try to jump, it always backfires.
Danny,
on
not everyone can do it as brilliantly as Miley Cyrus did.
Exactly
made that transition so seamless.
It's like diving in.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, this is, I think Danny put it best. Get some popcorn, get some you know, something to eat, sit back and
some
get
intestines.
Ready. Get ready for the ride. Yeah, right. Dive into a bowl of entrails and get ready because this movie is over the top. It's fun. It's exciting. It's crazy. Make sure you check it out. Thank you, guys. Great.
So awesome. Thank you. So
Danny Trejo and Alexa Vega, guys. Chatty Kills. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in a minute. Stay right there.
Get social with Preston and Steve and WMMR. Facebook, Twitter, you know, the usual places.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
Brought to you by Dietz & Watson. Your local Dietz & Watson Real Philly Delis are open for takeout. Taste four generations of family recipes made with love and show your support for local business. RealPhillyDeli.com, Dietz & Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
An Idaho man was killed when a tree fell on his tent at the Stagger Inn campground.
Stagger Inn campground?
Yeah, that's normally
where
a bar.
Where is the campground?
It's normally a bar name.
Dude, that happened last year around here.
And it killed a couple of kids.
I'm gonna say a family, yeah.
The sheriff's office said 48-year-old Kyle L. Garrett was found dead at the campsite Sunday night after the 200-foot tree fell on him.
Jesus.
Whoa. A 52-year-old female camper was also struck by the tree and was being treated for non-life-threatening injuries.
How do you get hit by a 200-foot tree and not die?
A windstorm caused numerous trees to weaken and fall in the Idaho Panhandle National Forest. So
Jesus.
It was just one of those scenarios. That's bad, bad, bad. Let's see. This is out of Juneau, Alaska. Police say a 35-foot whale-watching boat was taken out for an unauthorized spin over the weekend. Witnesses called police at 2:22 in the morning, Saturday, after seeing two intoxicated people stumble down a dock and get on board the Keet, a vessel used by Juneau whale watching. Witnesses also They also say the vessel was doing donuts in Aki Bay.
Guess what I get to do? Wee! Wee! Guess what I get to do?
I have to ask for that one more time, Steve.
That's what I get to do.
Oh, God.
Let's see. Coast Guardsmen responded and took control of the boat.
That's what I was doing.
The boarding crew described the man and woman as drunk and naked. Police say 27-year-old Joshua Carreri, a crewman on the vessel, was charged with driving while intoxicated and felony vehicle theft. He was also arrested on a warrant for failure to report to jail on a previous larceny charge.
Not good for them.
His company was not. His companion was not arrested. What's larceny? Anybody know?
It's theft. It's a
theft.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Costumed competitors slopped and grappled for victory in the World Gravy Wrestling Championships over the weekend.
Oh, I like that.
More than 1,500 people gathered. This is in Lancashire. This is in England. To watch the annual contest. 1,500 people came out for this thing. Each bout lasted for 2 minutes, and wrestlers were scored on audience applause. The dripping fighters were then hosed down by the fire services. Apparently, they host this every single year over there.
Yeah, it's time to kill them.
Yeah. And let's see. Collegedale, Tennessee resident. This is a sad story. Tennessee resident Linda Cooper has been asked to leave a church that she has attended for 6 decades.
Whoa.
Because she would not publicly condemn her daughter's lesbian lifestyle in front of the congregation. The woman's been going to the same church for over 60 years.
It's probably not a church she should be a member of anyway.
Cooper's daughter, Kat Cooper,
it's her own daughter.
A detective with the Collegedale Police Department. She and her partner, Krista, were married in Maryland in May. And the couple's been fighting the city government in an effort to be granted the same legal rights as heterosexual couples. So that's pissed people off in the town.
Okay.
Throughout the entire legal process, Linda Cooper supported her daughter. Linda Cooper's public support did not sit well with the church. And she was asked to either publicly denounce her daughter's lifestyle or leave. So she chose to leave.
It's a tough place to put a mother in.
That's just sad. Come on, man. A woman's been there for 60 years. Unbelievable. So she's sticking by her daughter, and I think that's cool. All right, and then finally we'll end with this. When you come to an acupuncture clinic, you expect to get stuck. You just don't expect to get stuck inside of the facility. It was an unusual 911 call. A woman reportedly called 911 and said, "I'm locked inside in somebody's business establishment. I don't hear anybody. The music went off. The door is locked, and his car is gone."
I have to stick it in your butt.
The call came August 5th from the Hua Tao Acupuncture and Chinese Herbs Clinic. The operator said, "Are you a patient?" The caller said, "Yes, I was in the middle of a treatment. All of a sudden, I saw him running out for someone to come, and I ended up pulling the needles out myself."
Wow.
She woke up on a treatment table. The caller said, "I had to pull the needles out of me in order to find out what was going on. I'm yelling for help for about 5 minutes or so."
So she was just abandoned there on the table.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Dr. Jeff Singh and his wife are the only two employees. Singh said that he was ashamed and still baffled by how he forgot about his own patient. And he locked up to leave for the day. Records show there's no history of disciplinary actions against him. The caller stayed on the line for about 10 minutes and police arrived as a worker showed up and was able to let her out.
Do you ever have acupuncture?
No, but I'd like to. I wouldn't mind doing it.
It's been around for quite a long time. There must be something to it.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying that out. All right, and there you go. That is what I have in the bizarre file for you at this point in time. We'll be back in a second. We'll have a lesson question, the trash, music news, and more. Stay there.
MMR and Live Nation are happy to announce the live performance drought is finally over. It's the Live In at the Drive-In concert series. A month of shows in the Phillies parking lot you'll experience from your car.
93.3 WMMR and Brent Smith and Zach Myers from Shinedown invite you to rock live in your ride Thursday, September 3rd.
Get up, move on.
See the full schedule at WMMR.com. The Live-In at the Drive-In Concert Series. A socially awesome solution to a performance-less pandemic.
Featuring Shinedown's Smith and Myers and many more.
Tickets on sale now at LiveNation.com. From 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Amongst yourself, when you think about the concerts over the years that you've seen, I'm sure you have a rank of the top five or something along those lines. The gentleman that's sitting to my left right now was on stage for my number one.
Wow.
And the Hell Freezes Over Tour. Greatest show I've ever seen. Walked away knowing that I would never see another show quite that good. And if he didn't exist, you wouldn't have this song. You would not have this song. And please welcome to our studio, Mr. Don Felder.
Yeah.
Thanks, Preston. It's great to be here, buddy.
Great to have you here, Don. Yeah, it's when I saw you guys play, I was blown away. There had been, you know, such a break between the Eagles being around. And I am mesmerized watching you play your instrument on stage. You were so precise. You are so exact on what you want to do that it's just a joy to watch you and listen. Obviously, to listen, but to watch you play is a really cool thing, too.
Well, there were no mistakes allowed in the Eagles, vocally or musically or anyway. We tried to do as close to perfection as we could, both on record and live. So everybody really paid a lot of attention, put in a lot of work and effort to try to produce the best show possible we could do.
Don, when you see footage from those concerts and back, obviously, there was the extended documentary. Which I know you have some issues with, but for fans, it is kind of a massive chronicling of the history of the band. When you are on stage and you're playing, and it is just flawless, and it's a level of musicianship. I mean, you and Joe Walsh together playing, I don't think there will ever exist two guitarists of such capability on stage playing. It was just a moment in time playing to perfection. Do you yourself get wowed by the phenomenon? I mean, what you guys were doing on stage together? I mean, is it possible to look back and be wowed by your own talent? Or is that too egotistical?
Well, I love playing with Joe. We had the best time both on stage and off stage together. We were both had a great deal of dexterity and ability to play. But what we were able to write and come up with together was just phenomenal. It was a unique combination. And we had so much fun off stage, trashing hotel rooms and tearing places up and just having a lot of time, spending the time off stage that when we were on stage and had to do our work, which was really play and fun for us, we just really enjoyed it. It was a wonderful time.
You got each other, obviously. He is legendary for being disruptive. He had, I believe he would bring a chainsaw with him, an electric chainsaw. Was that the rumor?
And he was my mentor when it came to trashing hotel rooms. Everything I know about wrecking places, I learned from Joe.
From Joe Walsh.
You know what, Don, there are several different kinds of guitarists. There are people that impress me with their flashy style, with their speed. But I think I'm more impressed with the people that can pick the right notes to play. And I mean that by almost treating the guitar as if it's a vocal instrument, a singing instrument, a melodic instrument, as opposed to something to impress people with. When you're writing, because obviously you have to construct a song with chords and changes and movements and things like that. But when I get sucked into your playing is when you get to a guitar solo. When you're personally constructing one, how many different drafts will you go for before you finally go, aha, that's it? Or is there an aha moment? Or do you know?
Well, you know, it's funny that I think it was Benjamin Franklin said, if you want somebody to remember something, set it to a simple melody, like the ABC song.
Yeah.
Everybody, kids, as they learn ABCs, but it's set to a very simple melody. And if you overplay, if you make it too complicated, people can't remember it. And the idea is coming from, I remember seeing Miles Davis at the Village Gate.
Oh, wow.
With Tony Williams and Herbie Hancock, Ron Carter, Wayne Shorter, all those great musicians.
Yeah.
And he could walk out on stage and play three or four notes that said more in those note choices than Kenny G can play in an hour. You know, he's got 1,000 notes going on.
Yeah.
So I just really took to heart the fact that it was important to be able to say the right notes at the right place in the right time. And so when we did Hotel California, that solo that's on the end of that thing was just a demo that I made up on the spot. I actually wrote kind of both sides of that, my part, and then I played another guitar. I said, well, Joe would play something kind of like this, and I'd play another thing, and then I would play and kind of put together that little duel on the end. When we got into the studio, I always thought that Joe and I would just set up two guitars, plug them in, and just go at each other.
Yeah. Well,
that's what we started doing, and Henley came in the studio and said, wait, stop. That's not like the demo. You have to do it like the demo. And I said, well, that was something I just made up a year ago. So we had to call my housekeeper in Malibu, get the cassette, play it over a blaster, record it in the studio in Miami, and I had to sit down and learn what I just made up at the time. So you never know if it's a matter of honing something or it's like just your first shot out of the first the passage writing something.
Well, you grew up in Florida, right? I think your first guitar, what did you trade? I read legend is cherry bombs or something that you traded to get your first guitar.
Yeah.
You actually became very proficient, and at a point you were Tom Petty's guitar teacher.
That's right, yeah. Uh-huh. Tom was one of my students. I used to teach in this music store there after high school, and Tom came in and was like this scrawny, long, blonde hair, buck-tooth-looking kid, and he had a guitar, and he wanted to learn to play guitar. He was playing bass in this band called the Rucker Brothers Band. And
was so he like a teenager at the time? Or?
Yeah, young teens, probably 13, 14, right. Something like that. He's a couple of years younger than me. Yeah.
Did you have your own band that was the Continentals at that time?
Yeah, uh-huh. Well, okay. Stills was in that band. With
Stephen Stills.
Yeah. Wow. So Tommy came in, and I started teaching him and trying to work with his band. He had two guitar players called the Rucker Brothers, and they would just flail artlessly at the same time. just tear at it. Nobody played rhythm, nobody played lead. It was just kind of chaos. So
must have killed you.
I just helped sort out their stuff a little bit. Tom was great. As a matter of fact, I just did an interview for a book they're writing on Tom last week before it came out.
So wait, so that long ago, did you see him though and you were like, wow, this kid's good?
I did. You know, it was funny. I'd go to some of his shows just to see how his band was coming along. And I would stand next to these girls, and Tom would come out with his long blonde hair and flip his hair and stand there and sing. And the girls would go, oh, my God, he's so good. I go, yeah, but he sounds like Dylan.
It's so wild to hear all these legendary names intermingled at a young age. And, you know, we kind of, in the world of rock music, went through that in the grunge scene in Seattle. And a lot of these groups were intertwined. And it seems to kind of fallen out these days. We don't see quite that type of scene. I know from watching the most recent documentary on the Eagles, the history of the band, you saw how these groups came together in California and they were swapping members pretty regularly.
Joe, yes,
I'm just curious if that happens at all today anymore or not.
It doesn't seem to be.
I don't hear about it happening so much, but the whole music industry has changed dramatically. So it may be going on, you just don't hear about it.
Yeah, just that whole story of living above Jackson Brown and
That was Glenn Frey.
Yeah. Which song was that?
Jackson... He was here, The Pretender is what he heard him writing in the other room.
Mm-hmm. No, but one of the songs he was writing and he just couldn't figure out like the lyrics for it. And Glenn was like, I got something for it.
It was Take It Easy.
Is that what it was? Yeah. Uh-huh.
You had worked in and out with those guys. The band was established and then you were playing slide guitar before that. You would jam just out of fun when you encounter these guys. And then they were so impressed with you, they made you a full-blown member of the band. Not like you're going to be a gun for hire. We want you to be a member of the Eagles. Did that blow you away, or did that seem like a logical progression?
Well, you know, I had known Bernie Ledden since high school. He actually replaced Stephen Stills in that band we had in Gainesville. And then Bernie moved back to California, and I moved to New York at the time. And Bernie kept calling me saying, what are you doing in New York? You need to come to L.A.
Right, yeah.
This is where the music scene is. So finally, I packed up everything I owned in a U-Haul trailer and drove an old Volvo from the East Coast to Boston. When I first got there in L.A., I went to work for Crosby Nash. Ironically enough, being Stephen Stills and playing his parts in that band with Crosby Nash, which was a great gig for me. I was making, in like 73, I was making $1,500 a week, which is a lot of money back then.
Yeah.
My wife was pregnant with our first child. I thought I had a great gig to, you know, support my family. I would play with the Eagles, just go hang out with them, because my friend Bernie was in the band, and we'd jam, do sound checks, and just play and have a good time. And they called me to come in and play slide guitar on this song called Good Day in Hell.
Yeah.
Little did I know that song would go on to be the theme of my life with them.
That's beautiful. That's very true, yeah.
So I went in and played on that session, and the next day I got a call from Glenn asking me to join the band. And I had a bit of a dilemma about giving up this kind of steady-paying job with Crosby Nash and was a little new baby on the way, and joining this band that I knew had episodes of nearly exploding and breaking up every day.
Yeah.
So it was a tough choice for me. I went to speak with Graham Nash about it, actually, and asked him what I should do, and he advised me that I should join the band. So I took his advice and joined the band.
There we go.
I'm very interested in the what happens in the dynamics with, like, arguments versus artistic integrity versus just wanting to get have a job and have a steady paycheck and taking care of your baby that's on the way and your wife. At what point do you decide, I need to fight for this because I believe in it and I think I can do a great job with it, this song, this vision, or whatever, and then or resign yourself to saying, you know what, this is a good gig, I'm going to enjoy it? And how often did you go back and forth on that argument in your own head?
Well, you know, the problem in that band was we had five A-type personalities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody could write, sing, and play. Everybody had fronted their own band at one time or another. It was like having five leaders in the band, that everyone was constantly trying to not only make the best record, write the best songs, put together the best show, make it the best we could possibly do. There was an abundance of talent, but there was also an abundance of egos involved with it as well. So I wound up taking a lot of steps backwards and letting those people that were much stronger as far as imposing their will on what was to be take over. And rightly so. I mean, Henley, I think, in my opinion, is one of the best rock voices there are and is in business today, as well as he's a great lyricist. So you look at that and you go, you know, okay, maybe he's got something. As a matter of fact, when we finished the song Hotel California, we were sitting in the playback studio in L.A., and the record company had been pounding on us to give them this record for a long time. And we had them into this playback party, and after we played Hotel California, Henley turned around and said, "That's going to be our next single." And I went, "Don, that's the wrong format." In the 70s AM radio, you had to be like 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
The intro had to be 30 seconds before the voice started.
Quick, yeah.
Hotel California's 6.5 minutes long. It's a minute before the vocals start. You can't dance to it. It's got this 2 minute guitar solo on the end. It's just the wrong format. And so he and I got in a little bit of an argument about it. And I finally said, "Okay, you go ahead, put it up. I told you so."
Right.
And I've never been so happy to have been so wrong in my life.
Well, it is the first song that comes to mind when you mention the Eagles, and history just is indicative of it. It's an amazing album. I was telling Preston later, I was doing some research on it. The greatest hits, Eagles' greatest hits album, sold 1 million records a month for 18 straight months.
Wow.
The biggest selling record of the last century. It's an astonishing thing. You talk about having all those incredibly talented people in the band, you know, like we talk about the Beatles, we just had the conversation about the Beatles. When your third guy is George Harrison, that's pretty amazing. When everybody in the Eagles at that time, could, as you said, could have fronted a band, did front a band, had all that talent. As the stories, and you've written your own book about your experiences with the band, which is a great book. Who immediately, was it Don Henley that you became contentious with the earliest?
No, I think it was Glenn, because the band originally started out as Glenn Frey's band.
Right.
He fronted the band. He was the front singer. He had Take It Easy as a hit and Peaceful Easy Feeling. All the early songs were sung by Glenn. And then Don slowly began to emerge from the drums in the back to becoming a lead singer and having a lot of big hits. And his writing just really took off. So there was a lot of contention between the two of them, as a matter of fact, about control issues, about who was, you know, in charge of the band. And so Glenn really took over the kind of political role of making the decisions and being the boss. And Joe and I would just go out and party and tear up hotel rooms and have fun and play guitar. Let those guys, quarrel about it. You know,
it's weird though, because you join the band. You're you know, you're married, you got a kid, so you join like the high profile, the band, the friggin' Eagles. And you've got, you know, how quickly did you, I mean, everyone at that time as in the book and in the documentary, Coke was the big, obviously it just ruled the roost. How soon before you were succumbing to all the temptations? Because, I mean, that was what everything was about then, right?
You mean minutes, hours, or or days?
Right. You never got into the ultra heavy. It was mostly cocaine and.
Well, you know, when I first joined the band, we were still doing rent-a-car tours. We were playing college campuses, right. County fairs. I mean, it wasn't like Learjets and limos at that time.
Right.
It was still a very small band. We were opening for other acts. We had a caravan of band and crew of five or six rental cars. We went to Radio Shack and bought these CB units because there were no cell phones, so we could talk back and forth to each other on the road.
Yeah.
In case somebody had to stop and go to the bathroom or got lost, we could find them, you know.
Yeah.
So it was not quite what you portrayed it there when I first joined the band. It was a lot of hard work.
Right, and, yeah.
Before the astronomical rise, though? Like, after you joined? Because that must have been so fast. In retrospect, looking back on it, you guys are playing the county fairs, and then you are in the Learjets.
Well, it took a while. I mean, the first record was On the Border that I played on, which was their third record, and it had followed up Desperado as the biggest single that they had, which was an okay record, but it wasn't necessarily their biggest commercial hit. So really, I think it really started taking off when we put out One of These Nights, which was a great AM track, and it had some great AM hits on it, Take It to the Limit, and One of These Nights, and that really started propelling the band. But when we hit Hotel California is really when it went through the roof. That was became the kind of international success that we'd all looked forward to.
Don, how often did you, because I know there's a story that surrounds Victim of Love, which is a song you were going to, you sing the vocals on. You've been promised. It caused contention with Don Henley because he ended up singing the vocals. But how often would you perform the songs in the studio, just perform them and record them? Because I understand that happened a fair amount with the Eagles, that you were able to just, you all play and go right to tape. Was that, in fact, what would happen often?
Yeah, Victim of Love was a track that I wrote all the music for and the melody. And then when we went into the studio, I'd arranged it so that we could play the track live. And if you look on the vinyl record, if anybody can find vinyl records anymore, Bill Simzig, our producer, used to etch in between the label and the last band. He would inscribe little hints in there. And
really?
On the B-side of Hotel California record, it says VOL is Five Piece Live, which means Victim of Love was recorded Five Piece Live.
Wow.
So
that's so cool.
Yeah, that little notes around there.
How many bands could do that these days? How many bands would have the balls to do that, to do completely live?
Yeah.
Just record
it. That's one of the things, yeah, in the documentary,
yeah.
There you guys go through several takes of one of the songs. I'm like, wait a minute, they're all playing and singing live at the same time. Nobody does that anymore.
Yeah, like I said, everybody could write, sing, and play in the band, so it was fun to be able to do it.
I want to geek out on you for a moment, Don, because you and Joe Walsh together, and I know we touched on this earlier, but your styles complement each other so wonderfully. You have a clear, calculated, clean, orchestrated musician as yourself in your solo construction. And Joe, while not overplaying, still has a bit of an improvisational and edgy feel to it. They contrast each other, not on opposite ends of the spectrum, but enough to really complement each other. And I absolutely love digging into hearing you guys play, and through some songs, you'll play a solo, he'll play a solo. And it was always fun to go, I think that's Don. that sounds like Don.
Yeah.
Or that was Joe right there. I know that was. And one in particular, obviously, is the Hotel California solo, which is just, you know, I'm sure in list of greatest guitar solos, it's got a rank near the top in some guitar magazines throughout the ages. There is classic footage of you guys playing it live. It's the one that most people know.
I love it.
And I don't know where that show was. I don't know if you know offhand where that might have taken place.
I thought it was at the Spectrum here in Philadelphia.
No way.
To tell you the truth.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
That'd be
that
wild.
Makes it even that much more special. And I'm sure you won't know the answer to this, but I've seen it so many times. There's a moment that you or two are, you do the harmony solo and then you go back and forth. Or you go back and forth, and then you go into the harmony solo. But as you're trading licks with each other, You kind of smile and you say something to Joe. Do you have any idea what you might have said to him at that point?
I know exactly what it was I said.
I wanted this for years.
Well, you know, during the days of the 70s, Joe and I both were consuming a great deal of cocaine.
Okay, yeah.
And the rumor has it.
The most embarrassing thing you could do was walk around in public with, like, a sugar coating on your nose. And we used to call that showing. You could show, you know. So
yeah.
In the middle of that solo, as we're filming, I look up at Joe on camera and go, "You're showing."
That's hilarious.
That's such an iconic piece of footage. It's so funny to hear the story behind that.
Wow.
On stage, when things started to get really testy, there's footage of Glenn Frey, actually, you and he fighting on stage. What was the basis of that? I understand that it had to do with Don and Glenn going more political. They wanted to do political stuff. You always had the contention that if you're going to do things, do it for charities, like, you know, you split on what you should be doing. Explain how you got that contentious that night with that footage of you guys fighting on stage.
Sure. They had decided to do a benefit for Cranston, who was a U.S. California senator in Washington, and it was a fundraiser for his campaign. And I didn't care.
You're not a political guy.
No, I was just politically illiterate at the time. I didn't even know who he was or care, really, to tell you the truth. So I said, "Sure, we'll go down and do this benefit." When we got there, his wife came up to me and my wife, who were standing there having appetizers, and she said, "Oh, I'd like to thank you for doing this for us. We really appreciate it." And I said, "Yeah, okay, you're welcome." And as she turned to walk away, I turned to my wife and said, "I guess." Like, right. I don't even know who she was or what this is about, but okay.
It's an honest comment.
So, yeah, Glenn overheard me say that and thought I was being disrespectful to the senator's wife and came over and dragged me back into a dressing room and started really, you know, punching me in the chest with his finger and yelling in my face. And finally, he and I, kind of our blood pressures elevated, and we'd been on the road, out of the studio and on the road for about a year and a half, and we had just had our nerves worn down to a fray and kind of got into it. And you heard it on the stage.
I think he's yelling. He's going to kick. He can't wait. Three more songs could kick your ass.
Yeah.
Oh, and didn't you?
I wish he had tried.
You could have taken him, couldn't you?
Well, listen, thank you so much for coming by here today. We really appreciate it. We're all huge, huge fans.
Thank you so much. Can't wait to get a cheesesteak before I leave.
Yeah, you got to do that. Donfelder.com. Don, continued success. Thanks for being
here. Thank you, guys. Appreciate
Don Felder, guys, on the Preston and Steve Show. Of the Eagles, absolutely. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in just a minute or two. We want you to stay right there because we got more coming up.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Godsmack. The Killers.
What's it gonna be?
Green Day.
We just keep on dreaming.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
We had a movie screening last night. Not only that, but a Q&A as well with the stars and director of this particular film. It's called The World's End. And Steve, you saw the last night.
And I loved it.
Excellent.
It was great.
So we want to welcome to our studio Simon Pegg, Edgar Wright, and Nick Frost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're happy you guys could all make it in here. This is really cool.
Yeah.
How did the Q&A go last night? Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, we're traveling around a lot, so when you walk into a Q&A and they're kind of 250 people all cheering and going bonkers, it feels amazing.
We had three standing ovations.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You know, during the movie, the reaction was great. It was because this is a wonderful way to cap off the trilogy. I think there's has a good heart to it. There are a lot of references. Actually, one of your guys told me to eliminate a reference because you're trying to keep a couple of secrets. But it's a love letter to people who have loved the previous films, and it's also it's a standalone funny ass movie. And the crowd was going nuts. And that's the thing that really caught me. Also, it just happened to hit me at the right time because. We've been talking about, you know, as you get a little bit older and as you perhaps try to recapture a bit of nostalgia in your life. And sometimes you go home to your town and you're walking through your town and you're like, is it me or is it is it them? Something's wrong, you know, and you're trying to figure out. And this movie takes it 10 levels past that. There is a concrete reason it feels not quite right.
Exactly. We thought it would be funny to you know, because everyone gets that. If you grow up in a certain place and you move away, you go back, and it just feels odd. It's like you feel a certain sense of alienation. Yeah?
Yeah.
With Shaun of the Dead, you know, we made a zombie film, and in Hot Fuzz, it was the kind of American action comedy. And,
right.
There's a little different thing going on in this one, but it's in the same vein and in the same spirit. So, yeah.
Was this sort of born of, I understood that, Edgar, it was when you guys were shooting Hot Fuzz, that you were at your actual hometown shooting it, and it sort of occurred to you guys at that point that this might be fodder for another film?
Yeah, Hot Fuzz was shot in my hometown, so just the experience of going back there, you know, inspired this in a way. Because it's that, it's exactly that thing where you know, like lots of the things that where the town is changing without you and there's nothing that you can do to stop it.
Right.
And you like to remember your hometown, you want it to stay like it was when you were a kid. And of course, that's impossible.
I have to tell you, I mean, I love your visual style. I mean, we're huge fans of Scott Pilgrim and, you know, all the stuff that you guys do. But in this movie, what rocked my world is there's some badass fights. I mean, you guys are all throwing down. Nick, you're incorporating WWE moves like crazy. I have to imagine. I mean, you've done, obviously, stunts and stuff before, but in close quarter fight, like bar fights.
Look at Jackie Chan. We're coming for you, buddy.
There's a people's elbow in there. There's a rock bottom.
Do I do the rock bottom?
I do the rock bottom.
Which one do I do? We do several moves that the Rock copyrights.
Yeah.
And we actually the Rock like tweeted our trailer on Twitter because he saw it and like we're going to screen the film for him in Hungary. I think he's making Hercules out there.
Oh, that's great.
Because we've used a couple of his signature moves, because we had this idea that the guys are just 40-year-old men and that, you know, they're not martial artists or anything.
No.
But all their fight moves would come from wrestling that they've watched when they were kids and various kung fu movies.
Rugby moves,
yeah. So there's several tributes to Dwayne Johnson in this movie.
Yeah. How is it directing that? Because, I mean, you know, one of my favorite fights is in a movie called The Warriors. It takes place.
Absolutely. I love The
Was
Warriors.
Was that a bit of an inspiration? Because this close quarter thing where it's going on, I assume it's a nightmare. Because there's a sequence where Simon, your character, is trying to drink a beer.
Yeah, and he's trying to hold on to his pint, which is the most important thing in the world to him, even more than his face.
Right.
So he's hanging on to his pint whilst fighting with the other hand.
And it's such a precise Harold Lloyd thing that's going on.
Yeah, with the guy actually... the guy who did the stunts in Scott Pilgrim, who's an Australian guy, I brought him to London to do this movie because I really liked doing the action in that. And he's an Australian stuntman that works with Jackie Chan. So he's worked with Jackie over the years. And so, you know, we're big fans of that kind of action, and also, you know, Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd.
Sure,
and so,
yeah.
But what it means is that, like, all the cast, like, train up. So these guys did, like, about, you know, like, a month's training. And everybody, like, including not just Simon and Nick, but Martin Freeman, they're all, like, doing a lot of the stunts themselves. And the cool thing with this is that if you watch the movie, you'll see that, like, the camera never cuts away. They're in these long takes where... there's lots and lots of brawling going on.
Yeah, I was blown away.
It's so much fun to do.
I mean, you're pretty badass, Simon, when you get going.
You better believe it.
And Nick as well, yeah.
You know, it's how I roll.
Nick takes on 10 men.
With those who may not be familiar with the plot line of the movie, I loved it because I went to see another film and I saw the trailer roll and I'm like, oh, this is going to be about a bunch of guys who are going to try and do this legendary pub crawl and it's try to have a pint at every bar in town within a certain amount of time, but things start to get a little bit strange and a little bit weird. Is the pub crawl, does that come from somebody's real life experience?
Oh yeah, they're pretty much most kind of like towns. I mean, you know, you have like bar crawls and stuff in like streets over here, but like in my hometown there was when I was 19, the drinking age is 18 in the UK, I should point that out. I decided that me and my friends were going to try and do all the pubs in our town, and it went spectacularly wrong. And I flamed out at pub 6, like so 6 or 7 out of 15.
Wow.
And it wasn't like they carried on with that one because it was my idea. It just stopped dead. So I think the fact that I never completed it has nagged at me enough that 20 years later we have this movie.
We tried to redo it a few years later, me and Simon.
Oh, yeah?
And he did even less. I think he got to about pub 4.
Wow.
Which is a shame, because you go for a night out and then you look at your watch, it's 10 to 8.
That's where the fantasy element of this movie comes in, the idea that I could drink 12 beers.
Now, I know, like, in the movie Jaws, there were a few scenes where Robert Shaw actually did try to drink during the scenes to add a little bit of realism.
In his big speech scene. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And they found out that didn't work out quite so well. Did you guys, was any actual alcohol consumed during the filming?
No. I mean, they wouldn't let you on, the insurance people wouldn't let you for starters.
Really?
I think also you have to drink so much. I mean, there's so many takes.
Yeah.
Like, it would be impossible.
Okay.
So it's basically like, it's just, but you just happen to have five great drunk actors. Like,
that's
you know
it. There's a subtle key to overdoing drunk. And you guys, especially there's a scene, Nick, where you're going out the door.
Yeah.
And it's a, I won't give it away, but it's a hilarious laugh. I've seen things similar to what you do happen as just happenstance. And the audience went nuts. It was hilarious.
I think the key to drunk acting is less is more.
Yeah.
And don't, you know, I think if you're drunk, you try to not be drunk. Right in front of straight, you know, sober people. So that's
good
the
point.
Yeah.
And with Simon, I've seen your character described, Gary described as an a-hole, and I don't think so. I think he's more of the guy that a lot of guys who maybe get too staid.
Yeah.
In their they need a guy like that to incite them. Would you agree with that?
He's kind of, you know, I don't like to reduce Gary to that, you know, to just an a-hole, because he's a sweet guy at heart.
He is.
I mean, he's very annoying, you know, because he kind of like his energy is boundless. He still dresses like he did when he was 19.
Right.
He's kind of this throwback, and he's very manipulative and selfish. But you kind of root for him because he's the only hero you have. In a way, he's the villain and the hero in the film, you know.
And he's the one who makes the initial discovery.
Absolutely. And for him, it's a happy moment when he realizes that it's not the fact that the town has changed or he's old.
Right.
There's a reason for it. And it's, you know, alien robots.
Right, which are awesome, by the way. And I have to ask, was this in any way? I said to Preston this morning, I said, there seems to be a little Bonnie Tyler video action in this.
You know what's so funny story. Is that the executive producer of the movie, Eric Fellner, like he used to produce all of those Duran Duran videos.
Oh, really?
Like, he produced the video for Wild Boys, and I said to Eric, I said, you know, this is like Wild Boys 2, right?
Yeah.
But he put me in touch with Russell Mulcahy, who directed that video, and I emailed him and said, hey, how did you do the glowing eyes in Total Eclipse of the Heart? I asked him, and I got the responses that they took scotch tape and they stuck it over the choir boys' eyes.
That's
wild.
They got
the choir boys to close their eyes, and then they stuck tape on their eyelids.
It's a cool effect, man. It looks really good.
No, it's funny because people said, oh, is it inspired by Total Eclipse of the Heart? I said, well, sort of.
Right.
I'm a big fan of glowing eyes, generally. The Fog, Demons, Westworld.
Yeah. A lot of those choir boys. The choir boys actually lost eyes.
They did.
I mean, technology's come on now, but since then, a lot of eyes went missing.
It was for a great video.
Yeah.
So there was a trade-off.
Do you guys consider yourself to be, like, fanboys? You know, going to...
I mean, you clearly are.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How dare you?
I think I'm a weird... I kind of step on the line between fanboy and jock.
Okay.
I'm
You're a fan jock.
Yeah. I'm an enigma in that respect.
Yeah.
So when you go to the screening last night where there's a Q&A, you guys are on the opposite end of the fanboydom, you know, where people were there to see you. How wild is that?
Oh, it's nice. Great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it's
we
amazing.
We get carried in and out on big chairs and people wash our feet in oil. It's nice.
I wonder if it's akin to the classic Shatner SNL bit, where you're... Because there is minutia I'm sure you guys are not even aware of that you created. You wrote your own projects, but you can't possibly retain all that stuff. And fans get a little...
Oh, we're pretty good. I mean, the thing is, we get exactly, you know, because we are fans, and so we totally empathize with how they feel, and it's amazing to be on the other end of that, you know. But, like, there was a guy the other night, we were in Boston, and he was convinced that there was a Deer Hunter reference in Shaun of the Dead, to the point where when we said, no, mate, you're wrong, he was like, no, I'm not.
It's
Deer Hunter.
Right.
Like, it was, no.
Yeah.
Somebody last night had made a T-shirt from the film without even seeing it. Like, I was amazed. Like, because... there's a running joke in the film that, like, when different phrases come up, like, Simon's character keeps saying, oh, good name for a band, write that down. And, like, one of the names is Gary King and the Enablers.
Right.
They were just your enablers. He goes, oh, Gary King and the Enablers. That's a good name for a band. Write that down. And somebody had made a T-shirt. He hadn't even seen the film yet. He had the Gary King and the Enablers T-shirt.
Out of human flesh.
Bound in human flesh. Eyelids stitched together.
I don't want people to think you need to be aware of the world of this to enjoy the movie. The movie stands alone as just a hilarious thing. And it's actually, it almost seemed to be two movies at once because just the initial early stages where you're sort of getting the guys together and going through that stuff and the, you know, the cassette. By the way, is it a collaborative effort picking the music? Because Primal Scream is one of my favorite bands. You use Loaded, which is great. It's amazing almost song. A centerpiece of, yeah, of is, the movie. Yeah. Jesus Jones and other bands. Who made the selections?
We wrote to the, so we made a big playlist of songs from like 87 to 93, like, which is like when we were at school and college. And then just while we were writing, you know, songs like Primal Scream and the Soup Dragons and Happy Mondays and Blur, all like Rose Straight to the Top.
Yeah, yeah.
Funny enough, like Soup Dragons, of course, is a Rolling Stones cover.
No, Edgar, your use of music in films has been great. Obviously, Scott Pilgrim, that was a huge part of that movie. I used, like, Threshold from Sex Ba-Bomb is on my workout list of music because it's a real intense driving song.
And you turned me
on to the band Metric as well. You've used some great music to great effect.
Simon, earlier in the day, you tweeted that you guys drove past the Rocky Steps on the way here, and you tweeted that you wanted to run up them again. You've done it before.
Yeah, when we were here with Shaun of the Dead, we actually had a chance to, I know it's like, oh, you guys that live here, this thing, oh, goddamn tourists. But you just see it, it's like a piece of murder history.
Yeah,
it's like, well, that's the Rocky Steps.
Yeah. It's kind of tiring, isn't it?
It is, but it's good.
Yeah.
And I've never seen the Liberty Bell, but I have run the Rocky Steps.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you got to have historical context.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, get your Liberty priorities right.
And Nick, you're going to the Phillies game tonight?
Yeah, I am.
Are you guys going as well?
I got to go to New York to do Jimmy Fallon, but these guys get to stay in Philly. I'm jealous.
I'm going
to
go to the Mutter Museum. Is that
good? Oh!
Yeah. This is fantastic.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, I'm going to do that.
This is a medical oddities museum that is phenomenal. You'll never see more half-aborted embryos in jars. It's just astonishing. But
see a lot of those, so, I mean, it
better be good. Offered the chance to leave his genitals there, actually. So he's going to check it out. See how he
probably says a lot about Edgar and I that I'd rather go to the ball game and he'd rather see embryos in a jar.
So, wait, you're doing Jimmy Fallon tonight.
I am, yes.
I love that show.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy. I like him a lot.
How weird is that? You're sitting at a desk and the audience is set far back. And
it's strange when you do those shows because you see them on TV all the time. And then when you're on them, it's like you're in the TV. It's like, it's a very strange feeling because the set's all around you. It's like having a 3D TV experience.
Are you doing anything fun with him? Because I know he likes to have fun with his
guests. I think I might be doing a little sketch, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be fun. But I'm sad that I got to leave these guys behind and they get to stay in Philly, you know.
We've been traveling for a long time.
I really want to see some balls.
Would you have been?
I'm not saying which event I want to go to.
Yes. What event would you have to.
I was looking at your guys' Twitter accounts, and I noticed something. We have Edgar at 360,000 followers, Nick at 800,000 followers, Simon 3,383,000.
It's the Trek effect.
Yeah. It's got to be, right?
Which, by the way, exemplary work in the Trek movies.
Thank you very much.
What so easily could have been effed up, J.J. Abrams. And
no, you're right.
They did a great job, and I believe they're hopefully doing a third one for the 50th.
I don't know. Practically speaking, I can't guarantee that's going to happen. Yeah. We'd love to get it out for the 50th anniversary, but that would mean like getting into it straight away next year.
Sure,
so. It's a genius job done in reinventing and reinvigorating and wiping all the dust off of that series and making it something that I think my kids are going to dig for years and years.
It's such a great story, and those are great characters, and all the people that were in the original series that are still with us have been so supportive, and I became very good friends with James Doohan's son. Chris, and he gave me one of Jimmy's pen knives, which I keep sacred to me.
He landed at Normandy. He was a legitimate war hero.
He started the JJ sent me this thing yesterday. It's a comparison of all our ages and all the original cast ages,
right?
And like Jimmy Doohan was 47 when he first started playing Scotty. I'm currently 43.
Wow.
And I think the biggest age gap was between maybe Walter Koenig and Anton Yelchin Chekhov. Walter was 31 and Anton's 24.
Oh, wow.
So, and our heights as well. Jimmy was an inch taller than me, so I've shrunk.
Okay.
Scotty has shrunk.
Wasn't he missing a part of it? He had a war wound, part of a finger
was
missing?
Yeah, he was a hero, Jimmy. It's an honor to sort of take on his role, you know.
I just want to knock you down a peg, Simon.
Do it. You die deserve that.
Very clever.
I've never heard that joke.
So Snooki has 6 million followers on Twitter.
That's
double.
Snooki from Jersey Shore.
Yeah. Jersey Shore. Yeah.
She's one of the aliens from Star Trek, right? Yeah.
I know my place. No, they look a little more realistic. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Concerning all that and all with the J.J. Abrams stuff and this and the Star Wars reboot.
Yeah,
is that something that you just want to say? Because you, out of reverence, go do it. I'd rather watch it. Or are you lobbying for inclusion in?
I would love to go visit set. I'd love to, I'll use every contact I have to check it out. But I think to be in it would, you know, so many people know that I like Star Wars. They'll if I walk on screen, they'll be, oh, it's ruined. So I'd happily sit back and just watch that thing. I think JJ's going to do an amazing job.
Nick, just how about be a you? Stormtrooper. Nobody will ever.
That's true.
Why not?
Just I might that, be. That I'm not going to ruin it because they'll go, oh, it could be Simon Pegg.
That's right. We'll just leave that out there.
Thing. You can then you can just have the bragging rights of you go to the cinema with somebody and go, that's me.
Sure. You can be Vader Jr.
Yeah. Nick, yeah. Any interest in a Star Wars appearance? If you
I don't know. I mean, maybe the young Sarlacc pit. Gamorrean guard or something. I could shoot my belly button and then put teeth in it.
Teeth in it. Well, you guys are awesome, and we're really happy to have you here and to be involved with the screening last night. And glad you're sticking around for a couple days.
It's hilarious. It's getting great reviews, Rotten Tomatoes, huge numbers.
Yeah, it's at 91%.
Definitely spend some time with it.
All right, the world's in. And thank you, Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, Edgar Wright.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. Stay where you are.
Love MMR? Buy some gear. Check out the Rock Shop at WMMR.com. Snazzy.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
Brought to you by HERS. Pick up a specially marked bag of HERS today for a chance to win $10,000 and take your summer to the next level. Full rules and details at summer.hers.com. HERS, forever good.
Cops in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Stopped a suspicious car without its headlights on and found a load of pot plants in the front and receipts. But the guy who was driving, his buddy, was in the trunk. The Toyota was pulled over at about 10 p.m. on Sunday, and police found the driver surrounded by 20 marijuana plants and his passenger in the trunk, seemingly to make room for the marijuana in the front seat.
Yes, officer, did I do anything wrong?
The 23-year-old man and 24-year-old in the trunk each face charges of possession of a controlled substance for the purpose of trafficking and cultivation under the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act.
So, but up there, I guess, what is it, British Columbia? Because pot's legal, right, in Vancouver?
I think it's... There are loose rules in Vancouver, but I don't know.
I always thought it was much more relaxed when it came to that up there.
Like decriminalization, which means, I guess, you know, maybe you're not going to get, like, arrested for smoking it or whatever. But when you're transplanting or transporting plants.
Yeah. All right, maybe.
That's a big deal. This is a wild story. A new London skyscraper dubbed the Walkie Talkie has been blamed for reflecting light, which has melted parts of a car parked on a nearby street. Martin Lindsay parked his Jaguar on East Cheap in the city of London on Thursday afternoon. When he returned about 2 hours later, he found parts of his car, including the wing mirror and badge, had melted. Mr. Lindsay said he could not believe the damage.
Right here on my Jaguar.
The developers had apologized and paid for repairs. The 37-story skyscraper at 20 Fenchurch Street, which has been nicknamed the walkie-talkie because of its shape, is currently under construction. Mr. Lindsay said, I was walking down the road and saw a photographer taking photos, and I asked, what's happening? The photographer asked me, have you seen that car? The owner won't be happy. I said, I am the owner. Crikey, that's awful.
Crikey?
The wing mirror, panels, and Jaguar badge had all melted. He said it could be dangerous. Imagine if the sun reflected on the wrong part of the body. So basically, it's turned into a magnifying glass of sorts.
And the building is concave.
Mm-hmm.
So they were showing press. I saw a feature on it. There was a guy who was cooking the classic egg on the on the thing out in the open. It just forces the light. It focuses the light.
Concentrated it, and it makes it really, really hot. In a joint statement, developers, Land Securities, and Canary Wharf said, We are aware of concerns regarding the light reflecting from 20 Fenchurch Street and are looking into the matter.
It is our extreme desire not to set anyone on fire.
As a precautionary measure, the City of London has agreed to suspend 3 parking bays in the area, which may be affected while we investigate the situation further. Mr. Lindsay said the developers had apologized and agreed to sort out the repair costs.
I don't know how the hell they're going to do that. They got to replace the whole front of the building.
Yeah. A police SWAT officer had a Glock 35 with a flashlight in his thigh holster at a children's reading event when a boy actually managed to reach up and pull the trigger and shoot the officer.
Oh, man.
He's okay. Lieutenant Sierra Bruca with the department said it doesn't have an external safety.
Or God damn, yeah!
The gun functioned how it was supposed to while the trigger was pulled and the gun went off.
Kid!
The officer was showing the department's SWAT truck, vest, and other gear at a children's event called Reading Roundup. A small child, 6 to 8 years old, was able to walk up to the officer and pull the trigger. You little dick. And
yeah. Why wasn't the safety on?
It doesn't have a safety.
The
bullet hit the officer's leg. He was taken to the hospital for a minor injury and released.
Oh, that's okay.
Yep. The department is investigating the shooting to see if protocols or procedures need to be changed to prevent the same thing from happening once again.
Maybe let the children instruct them to not touch the guns.
Well, you know, they're kids. Who knows? Officers want to find the child and his parents to piece together what went wrong. Police say because the gun was in a holster to accommodate the attached flashlight, the trigger was more accessible.
You know, it reminds me, Preston, of that classic footage of I think it's a DEA agent who discharges a weapon in the classroom. Shoots himself in the foot.
Shoots himself.
Yeah.
And he's like, is everybody okay? And then he picks up like an assault rifle and everybody runs out of the classroom. It's awesome. The officer has been on the SWAT team for about 5 years and he is back on duty. So he's okay. And there you go. That is your bizarre file for right now. We got to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. Stay there.
MMR and Live Nation are happy to announce the live performance drought is finally over. It's the Live-In at the Drive-In Concert Series. A month of shows in the Phillies parking lot you'll experience from your car. 93.3 WMMR and the Struts invite you to rock out live in your ride Saturday, August 22nd.
Your body talks! Your body talks!
The Live-In at the Drive-In Concert Series.
A socially awesome
solution to a performance-less pandemic. Featuring the Struts and many
more. See the full schedule at WMMR.com.
Tickets on sale now at LiveNation.com. From 93.3 WMMR.
Everything that rocks.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
Brought to us by Horizon. Stay cool with double tune-up savings. Get Horizon's AC tune-up for just $59 and your fall heating tune-up for $39. HorizonServices.com.
What's going on this morning, Steve?
Well, just 3 months after Nicolas Cage and Erica Koike tied the knot, the two are now officially divorced. Koike says that despite the split, there were good times, like last Tuesday at 3 p.m. A Khloe Kardashian superfan named Narbe had his dream come true when she agreed to be his date to the Hoover High School prom in Glendale. The magical evening ended with the two performing The Time of My Life from Dirty Dancing, during which Khloe hoisted Narbe over her head.
Oh, my God.
And finally, Ric Flair revealing to TMZ Sports that he underwent surgery to receive a pacemaker and is doing fantastically well. Amazingly, because of Flair's energetic style, surgeons turned his left nipple into a dial, which he can increase when he wants to yell, "Woo!"
Nice.
And that's your Hollywood Track.
All right. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Me too. Really
because excited. They sound awesome. They're doing a little bit of a sound check, and they're in fine voice.
They've been warming up in our studio, and if you have kids, you're quite aware of this group, or if you've listened to our show for a number of years, you know this.
Hot potato.
And,
hot potato.
Sing it all the time.
Kathy's famous rendition
hot
of it from years
potato,
ago.
Potato.
But we'll explain.
Potato.
Come on.
Potato.
Sing it.
Ladies and gentlemen, we give you the Wiggles.
Yay!
Lucky, Emma, Simon, and Anthony are all here. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming here. We appreciate it. We have been really excited. Kathy here has been a massive fan of the Wiggles. And she set the whole thing up. When you first approached us and said, guys, I think I got the Wiggles, we were like, really?
Our boss was like, really?
Yeah. He doesn't get it. He doesn't understand the impact of the Wiggles.
Well, his kids were too old by the time you guys had come out. So, yeah.
You know, in college, I babysat. I always tell the story. I was a terrible waitress, couldn't do it. So I babysat to get my way through college. And you guys were like number one, 8 a.m. every morning.
Kathy, let's give you a quick Wiggle quiz, okay? Join in. We're going to do three or four excerpts of songs. You've got to sing along.
All right, go ahead, Kathy.
Here we go.
Chugga-chugga, big red car.
Come on.
We travel near and we travel far. Tick-a-tick, chugga-chugga, big red car.
How about this? Okay, how about this one?
Hot potato, hot potato.
Of course.
Hot potato, hot potato.
Okay, how about this one, Kathy?
Salad.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yummy, yummy.
Come on, let's sing.
Fruit salad.
Everybody.
Yummy, yummy.
Gotta sing.
Fruit salad. Yummy, yummy.
Yummy,
yummy,
yummy fruit salad.
Come on, Kat. Salad.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to jump in. No, that one I definitely knew.
Time. I think we got it culturally wrong, though. In Australia, you know, for breakfast we have fruit salad. We really do. Fruit salad and coffee. We come here to your beautiful studios. There's cannelloni and frozen ice.
A little different.
It's a little different. Wrong? Yeah. It's our tradition. It's basically that's our Vegemite.
Right.
So,
Right, mate.
Well, Anthony, you're an original member. Did you create the Wiggles?
I'm not that. I did create the Wiggles, but I wasn't that smart, and I don't know how we're still here after 22 years. But I'm so happy we are.
It's an amazing. Do you come from a history of teachers that had a musical leaning?
Murray, Greg, and myself were at university studying early childhood teaching, so we're early childhood teachers, and we were in rock bands before that as well. Huh. So we put it together. And here we are. But, you know, over the years, we had so many great experiences traveling the world. Lots of fun things have happened to us. And then the boys retired last year and they handed over the purple shirt to Lockie. The yellow shirt, for the first time ever, we got a female Wiggle.
Yeah.
That's Emma.
Broke through that glass ceiling, didn't you?
You guys have got to hear about Simon, who is the new Red Wiggle. He was the Phantom of the Opera in Australia. Yeah. Now, that sounds great, and it was. We saw him on stage, and we were mates before that. So we said, Murray said, would you like to take over? He said, yes. Now, the first couple of performances, he got confused. Listen to what happened. This is an exclusive.
Okay.
All right, what happened?
What happened?
You alone can make my song take flight. Toot, toot, chugga, chugga, big red car. Last night.
Wow. You had a complete meltdown.
Confusing time.
A true story. And anyone watching this on the web, you'll understand why. Yeah. He wore the Phantom mask for the first couple of performances. I said, Simon, you've got to take it off. He took it off. I said, put it back on, mate.
No, you're all good looking, which is great because you don't scare the kids, which is cool.
Yeah, that's good.
But oh, no, I have a total crush on Emma already.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
I think she's got to be the new America's sweetheart.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Emma, talk about yourself. What the things? She's like MacGyver.
Really?
She rally car drives.
Are you kidding? You are a rally car driver?
I used to do it in the junior section in Australia.
And that's some tough terrain.
It was.
Yeah.
But my dad was really into it. And we'd only race Renault cars, you know, the French.
Yeah,
cars.
Right, Renault, yeah.
Yeah, so that was it. And I wasn't allowed to have any other car.
Wow. Well, I always joke because Australia is, it's kind of, I think Australia looks fantastic and awesome. But the one point I contend is that everything there can kill you.
It's true.
Everything it's true. There is deadly.
People are so scared, though, and I don't think you need to.
Okay, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. The other day, my family joined me in Queensland, and there was frogs, of course. And the frogs
can probably kill you, right?
Well, they can. Yeah. They're cane toads. My little boy was about to play with a frog. I said, Antonio, that's a cane toad, mate. It's poison.
Poison.
Right? We've got poisonous frogs.
You've got the saltwater crocodiles, anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You've got the box jellyfish. Yeah. You've got the funnel web spiders.
You have the ringed octopus.
The ringed octopus.
We're not filling ourselves.
And Yahoo Serious.
And let me tell you, we're great mates of the Wiggles, and of course, it killed him in the end was Steve Irwin. What a great
guy. Yeah, yeah.
And the great thing about Steve, he took Australia to the world, and he represents to me what Australia's all about.
Do you know what's funny about it? Maybe that adversity, you know, Australia was originally a penal colony, and,
yeah.
but
yeah.
every Australian I've ever encountered has a great zeal for life.
Yeah.
There's very positive.
Also, you know, people say, how long does it take to get over to Philadelphia? It's 26 hours flying, but you know what? We've got nothing else around us. It's, you have to fly that far.
A couple things I want to touch on. The Wiggles are going to be playing the Tower Theater in August. It's on a Saturday. It's the 17th, and you can get information at thewiggles.com. But I want some perspective here, because the Wiggles have sold more than 23 million DVDs.
Oh, it's astonishing.
Videos, 7 million CDs, 8 million books worldwide.
Oh,
it's a juggernaut. It's just amazing.
And those books, there's only 4 words in them.
Anthony, how old's your son?
My son is 6 years old.
So my son is 6 as well, yeah. and there was a definite 2-year period where the Wiggles were a huge part of
same
his
with
life.
Me, same with me.
All right, so what was his perspective on it with you being in the group and him being your son?
He loved it, absolutely loved it, but at the moment he says, Dad, park the big red car around the corner when you drop me off at school.
Oh, you've got the
he's
car?
He's a little bit embarrassed now.
Yeah.
But he loved it for a while.
I have to ask, is there are, you know, several successful children's groups that are out there for entertaining and musical groups and so forth. Is there a certain amount of competition amongst, you know,
yeah, you guys have rumbles with the Fresh Beat Band?
Yeah.
Imagination Movers?
That might win, I reckon.
Yeah. Do you know what? Like any parent, if your child is being entertained by these guys, Imagination Movers, Fresh Beat Band, my children love the Fresh Beat Band. And I was just happy for my kids to do that. So me and my wife, you know, we could have a cup of coffee together or whatever, you know.
Leave us alone.
The old or whatever. But it's true. It's if they're being entertained, you're happy, mate. But Dora, I got to say, I was glad when they moved on from Dora, though, because Dora, as good as she is, but that voice, man, after
yes.
a while.
Yeah. And they repeat things over and over again.
Apparently, and I don't want to let any national security out, but they're using that voice in Guantanamo.
to extract information?
Yeah.
What's the one that pisses you off, Casey? The kid who's always complaining.
Oh, Caillou.
Caillou.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't like Caillou.
Caillou is apparently an insufferable
little
bastard.
He's a whiner.
He's a French-Canadian punk.
The reason I said that, there was a story in Australia, and you can look this up. This is the truth. There was a guy in Australia who was holding someone hostage, and it's a terrible story.
Yeah.
But the Australian police forced to drive the guy mad and get him out of there, played hot potato on a loop.
No.
That actually happened.
I've never heard that.
You reported this story, yeah.
I could see that.
Hot potato, hot potato.
Over and over nonstop.
I'd be fine with it.
You'd be all right.
Yeah. Hot potato, hot potato.
Potato.
Hot potato, hot potato.
Come on, Kath.
I you know, there's an art to keeping a child's attention, but also I was reading about you guys and about the music and the construction of the songs. You're attempting to instruct as well. So I mean, there's more to it than just something to occupy the kid's time and have him his eyes roll white. You
there
know?
Is, but you know, I think the good thing about the Wiggles from the start is that even if we're trying to, you know, further, you know, eating fruit salad,
right? Yeah.
Instead of going into real detail, we just give him the hook line, fruit salad, yummy,
right.
yummy. So when you go past fruit salad, you'll go, yummy, yummy.
Yummy, yummy.
There's so much. Children get bombarded. We all, adults do too,
right.
to eat all the wrong foods. So it's good to give a bit of a plug for the good foods.
Sure.
Well, let's hear a song, if you guys don't mind, and then we'll talk some more about the Wiggles.
This is a new song. It's called Do the Propeller, and we'll do a little bit of it so we don't drive everyone crazy. Oh, how's it going?
I'll do the propeller too.
Yeah.
I am not good at the propeller, I just found out.
So, Emma, what is it like breaking the gender barrier in the Wiggles?
It's actually really exciting. We've seen a lot of children, especially girls, arrive at the show dressed exactly like me, like head to toe with the bow and the bows on the shoes. And unfortunately, the bows are staying the same size, so they're actually bigger than their head.
Right.
And it's just wonderful. We've seen such a change. And even the other day, we went to the Mets game. We are going to the Philly game today, but we went to the Mets game. and a girl arrived dressed like me for the Mets game.
Oh, that's wild.
That's awesome. Now, Anthony, has anybody been upset that it's been a boys' club only, and how dare you let a woman in? Really?
Yes. The first interview we did in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, Los Angeles would be the place where you get. Oh, yeah. They're going to be very PC over there. Yeah.
Yeah. But he came up to me and he said, I can't believe you replaced the guy with a girl. And then he went, by the way, you guys Trekkies?
Those do look like Star Trek uniforms. I mean, it could be. You got to imagine the poor guy's got to wear the Barney costume. I mean, you guys get off pretty lightly. You know?
Yeah.
These are not bad.
And you said 22 years it's been?
22 years.
I mean, it's amazing to see how you look. You seem to be still enjoying yourself.
Oh, I absolutely love it. The audiences are fantastic. We get up in the morning, sing songs that are, you know, just happy songs.
Life-affirming. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
But are there times when you're really not that happy and you have to sing some songs, you know, where you're like, oh, man.
No, never on stage.
Never on stage, okay.
Sitting in the car, like we got up this morning at 5:30 and that was a little hard.
Sure.
But, you know, but I'm actually a morning person. I drive these guys crazy. That's why the others left.
Yeah. That's it. Enough!
No, but Anthony's energy really keeps us going as well, and it's amazing to see how much energy he has. Yeah. And
You know what? They've got a new Wiggles theme song, right? We wrote it. And do the words you were singing about me today, Lockie. Okay, you ready? Ready, steady, Wiggle? Remember the other guy too? Yeah, sorry.
Ready, steady, Wiggle.
Emma Lockie Simon, the old guy too.
The old guy.
I love that our names get in there.
Yeah,
baby.
The old guy.
The ultimate diss.
Hey, when you do the live production, I've seen it up on stage. How many people are on stage with you? It's a big production.
We've had up to 20 people on stage. You know, it can be up to 20 people. They do like a full Broadway type deal, production. Yeah.
Driving cars out on the
cars
stage.
Cars coming out on stage, flags.
And then you go out into the audience as well.
We do all the time. And it's not a taped show either.
Right.
We play a lot of the music live. So, you know, we love still rocking out.
It's awesome.
Do you have a favorite song?
I do. Tie Me Kangaroo Down Sport. Can I play a little
bit?
Yes,
please.
Watch me wallabies feed, mate. Watch me wallabies feed. You know they're a dangerous breed, mate. So watch me wallabies feed. All together now, tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
Everybody.
Tie me kangaroo down, sport. Tie me kangaroo down.
I like that.
See, all right, so, you know, I have three kids, and I think, you know, at that age, I really got into you guys, Backyardigans, anything that, where there was good music, mm-hmm. you know, like that was pleasing to me.
Backyardigans were great music. It was like New Orleans type of stuff.
Right. But the thing is, I've seen all your live shows as well. My kids were scared at the Backyardigans because these little things that were on the TV are now these big, giant creatures.
Oh, yeah.
You know, same thing with Dora, but, you know, you get what you get. Like, you guys are on the TV, and then you guys are on the screen. It's not like this
giant, not a huge transition.
Monstrosity.
Yeah. Right.
It's still when we meet a lot of children, they're so used to seeing us on the TV, and we're this big. And when we are in real life, and especially Simon, Simon's tall.
Simon's 6 foot
and especially,
four.
You know, like Greg and Murray, they're really tall.
Well, you have to imagine. I mean, it would be equivalent to meeting a rock idol, you know, for an adult. I mean, you guys are the soundtrack of their life at a certain point. So that's got to be cool. I was reading about the Madison Square Garden shows. Mm-hmm. Were you there for that?
Yes, I was.
You sold out, right?
13 shows. But you know what happened? Chris Martin from Coldplay.
Yes.
He did shows in Australia, and he told the story that Coldplay were really hitting big, and then he saw the Wiggles had sold out 13 shows, and he went, that's their big. Do you know what? On YouTube, which is one of my proudest moments, they invited us to the show, and they sang Fruit Salad.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh,
I got to
get that audio.
Have a look at it. It's quite amazing. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Speaking of Chris Martin and celebrities, have you been surprised at anybody or you found out that they were a fan or have kids that watch or have actually you've met and they've told
John
you about
Fogarty.
Really?
John,
one of my favorite musicians.
Yeah, John was had a little girl later in life and loved Wiggle Bay, our DVD. And he contacted us and said, I'd love to do a song with you. We did three songs with John Fogarty on a Christmas album.
No way.
And we went to his studio where he was recording an album, and Murray and myself are guitar players, and John showed us like 50 guitars he had lined up to do this to record. And the engineer said he knows the sound of every one of those guitars. Wow. He knows what song he's going to play it on. Amazing guy, incredible singer, and a historian of rock, too. He knows everything about rock and roll.
He does,
well,
yeah.
The Kangaroo song you were just playing, it's got a, almost like a Proud Mary type of...
sure.
You know? I can see Fogarty enjoying your music. There you go.
Go ahead, yeah.
So I found out about you guys. My brother has kids, and they're older. And so
they're in college.
No. But my nephew was just infatuated with you now. And unfortunately, you know, he's grown up, and now he's all into baseball and all that sort of stuff. But when I first heard about you guys, I was so excited because my nickname in college was Wiggles.
Yeah.
The way through college, people that, you know, that I graduated with and all, they still call me Wiggles. So.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's
right. Yeah. And I never, I would ask, I'm like, why do you guys call me Wiggles? And they're like, because you're Wiggles.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, that's it.
Your Wiggles, man. Hey, I'm going to play a little bit of Coldplay covering Fruit Salad.
Awesome.
So you guys probably won't be able to hear this, but let me hear it.
For our kids, because we've been joined tonight by some special guests called the Wiggles, and this,
oh, the crowd's going crazy, too.
We just want to say hi to them. This is a little tribute for them, okay? Most of you won't know this song because it's too old, but if you're under the age of 7, this one's going to be the biggest hit in the night, okay? Yummy, 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 yummy fruit salad.
That's awesome.
Yummy, yummy fruit salad. Yummy, 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 yummy fruit salad. Yummy, yummy.
That's awesome.
It was great.
Oh, that's
and that
really
guy
great.
Married Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, that's very cool.
Wow. So once again, they're going to be performing at the Tower Theater, and that's Saturday, August 17th.
I want to thank you guys for providing me for like a half hour of peace and quiet every now and then when my son was 3 and 4, and just really for really good quality entertainment. And to have you guys in the studio, it's sort of been a running joke, but it's also been something that's serious for us. Like, we love having guys like you stop by. Right. So thanks for coming
thanks.
In.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was when I looked up and I saw Simon, I was like, oh my God, you guys are here. I did want to ask real quick, who is the biggest heartthrob of the crew? Because listen, yeah, there's kids watching, but there are also mothers watching
as
well.
Yeah.
We've got all different generations here. Uh-huh. So
okay, grandparents.
You're hitting with the grandparents?
I didn't say that.
No.
But Simon is...
Is the thinking woman's...
And, yeah, he gets the reporters, the girl reporters. And Lockie is actually in Cleo Bachelor of the Year
in Australia.
So that's happening when we get back to Australia, like in a couple of days. So we're gearing up for that, but these
I know. I know you guys are completely on the up and up, but it doesn't hurt to have you give the mom some eye candy, right?
Oh. Yeah.
Lockie, you kind of look like one of the Phillies players. You look like a guy named Chase Utley. He plays
second
base
for us. That's a good thing.
He's the heartthrob of the team, too.
And the Phantom of the Opera background, right?
Yeah. You know, I was saying to Simon, it was great that he was in the Phantom of the Opera and it wasn't the Hunchback of Notre Dame.
What is this? Oh, yeah. In fact, we're looking at some tweets that are coming in right now. And very sexy Maria tweeted in, "Hello, Purple."
It happens all the time. All the time.
Then you're gonna get a call later on. Hello, it's Purple there.
I'm at Bloomlung 17 in the Airport Ramada.
Oh, goodness. Wow. All right, well, we can't thank you enough. This has been a real thrill for us.
Thank you.
Before we do wrap it up, can we hear the Wiggles theme real quick?
Yeah.
What are you going to say this time? Not the old guy, too? Tell me some of the words, okay?
Ready, steady, wiggle.
Emma, Lockie, Simon, nappy boy, too.
Ready, steady, wiggle.
You can jump like a kangaroo.
Ready, steady, wiggle.
Dorothy, Wags, and Henry, too.
Ready, steady, wiggle.
And Captain Pantasword, woohoo!
Here we go now.
Wiggle, 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 woo!
Yeah!
Yeah!
I know you're wrapping this up, but I just had a thought. Is there any chance you could sing Preston and Steve in there somewhere?
Yeah. Yes.
Right. So, should we give them all our names?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
They're all right here.
That's good.
Can you guys make us lunch? Would that be too much?
Let's do it. You ready? You got to mention all the names.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, but we'll hand you the list. All right.
Here, I'll write it down.
Oh, you got it? Okay.
I know this is last minute, but good call, Case.
You could just say MMR.
Yeah.
WMMR.
These guys are musicians.
Here we go. Let's see what happens.
Hey, the guy recorded with Fogarty.
WMMR 93.3.
Lockie, stop thinking about the lady that wrote you the note. It is WMMR.
His head is always in a different place. Here we go.
WMMR 93.3.
But let me tell you something. They don't say double M. You say MMR.
You just say MMR.
MMR. Well, this is going very well.
MMR 99.3.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
93.3.
And then you've got the names, Lockie.
Lockie, okay. That's
Lockie,
it.
Lockie, you've got the names.
Yeah. Okay.
Why do we leave him with the names?
Here we go.
Oh, no.
MMR 93.3.
Fresh and Steve, Casey, Kathy, Nick, and Marissa.
MMR 93.3.
You can jump like a kangaroo.
All right. So we'll take it. Lyrically, it's not awesome, but I loved it. Yeah.
We will take it.
We got it.
Thank you
Thank you very much.
Lockie, Emma, Simon, and Anthony.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Stay there.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.